There you go.
That's pretty funky.
Good evening. We call the Tax Conference Committee to order on Friday. Not sure what day it is, Mr. Chair, but it's Friday. Mr. Chair, we have a list, and I don't know for sure which ones we'll do here and not, and maybe we can adopt some, and most we probably will just talk about, and obviously not adopt anything that we can't, that's still controversial. But I had an idea. One thing I was thinking, Mr. Chair, I did not put the unsession stuff on here, and we know we have to do that. And I had a thought on this, and I just told the commissioner I walked in. It really wasn't my idea. Staff. Why don't we assign the staff, House, Senate, and Revenue to create an unsession article of all the provisions, and then we'll have a piece of paper we can all vote for, against, and do what you had talked about, where if you guys don't like some or we don't like, we just take it out. Mm-hmm. And then we don't have to spend hours in the conference committee going through the provisions. What would you think of that?
Well, Madam Chair, I think it's a good idea. And I think the Senate and House staff have already been working on this. So we'll bring the department into the discussion. I think there's a couple of provisions we need to talk about.
And I don't know what they are, but I've...
Purpose statements and what was the other one?
Mr. Sylvia? What was the second provision that we wanted to discuss?
It's
language and what?
The disparity reduction.
Disparity reduction.
Well, and Mr. Chair, so what I was thinking is I, you know, and I'm aware that staff's been working on it. What I mean is that they would create it as an article, and we would simply adopt the article. So if there's a couple points that, you know, you guys want and we don't, we'll just take it out, and if something, you know, vice versa. And then we can just adopt the article, if that works. Commissioner, what do you think about that?
Madam Chair, no, I really appreciate the consideration both the Senate and the House have given to the governor's unsession proposal, and this sounds like a great proposal. I know our staff would be glad to work with your staffs. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, they're probably mostly done. But if you think of it, when we actually have we're signing the bill, it would just have its own article. Does that make sense?
Sounds good.
Okay. So I think first on the list, we were hoping to talk about estate and gift tax changes, and I think, other than a few things, they're almost the same. So if I may, I think what I'd like to do is ask Mr. Michael to talk to us about what we've got going there. And again, they're not that different.
Just
Senator Resk.
When they do that, could they say what page it is on the side-by-side and also the page in the actual House bill, since what we're looking at is mostly House provision, if you don't mind.
Sure. Mr. Michael, did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Some page, as you know, pages on the side by side, I guess.
Right.
And the language. I'd like to look at the language, too.
So, Mr. Michael, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm going to try to be really good about this. You're going to have to pull that microphone. We found out with Mr. Sylvia that we couldn't hear him that much. So,
all right.
Mr. Michael.
Give me a minute to find where it is in the bill, but it's on. We're going to start on page 19 of the side by side, and in the bill, it's the provisions are scattered, but they.
Okay, we're looking for.
They start on page 49 of the House bill. Sections 3 and 4 are basically cleanup provisions. They're the same in both bills. One of the things when we repealed the gift tax in Tax Bill 1, we did not strike some references in the data practices chapter, and so this does that. And like I said, they're the same in both bills. The next 3 and 4. These are probably some provisions that you could actually adopt if you want to adopt, since they're, you know, just technical.
We can do them if you guys want to, one by one, or we can hear it all and then decide what we want to adopt.
Yeah, okay.
Let's hear it all.
Because we have differences that we won't adopt, but, okay. And by the way, we have an amendment that Mr. Michael will explain that he just told me about.
We've seen it.
You knew about it ahead of me then, so good job. I don't know how you did that, but nicely done.
Our staff has really been very cooperative with one another to make sure that we're share it with your folks and what we're proposing and vice versa, and that is so appreciated, Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
It really helps us not to make mistakes.
Mr. Michael.
The next provisions on page 21 of the side-by-side, and in the bill, it's page 659 that what this does is two things. First, it updates the reference to the Internal Revenue Code, so that is through March 26th for purposes of the estate tax. I don't think that has any material effect. The more important thing is the qualified work of art provision that essentially provides that if a non-resident owns a qualified work of art that is on loan to a Minnesota nonprofit, typically would be a museum, that property will not be treated as Minnesota situs property. And as a result of that, it won't have the potential to trigger a Minnesota estate tax filing or paying obligation. So, and the provision in the Senate bill is, I think it's essentially the same as the House bill on that provision, but the Senate also has a domicile provision, which I guess I won't be the one to describe.
We can come back to that, and so we'll have your staff, Senator Skoy, if that's okay, just walk through that domicile provision that you have.
A question. So it's, you say for the Senate that it's similar except for the qualified work of art. I thought it was similar except for the domicile language. Or I thought it was the same except for the domicile language.
That's what he said.
Well, that's not what it says here. I'm just wanting to make sure I'm looking at this.
Side by side.
I'm looking at the list we have. I'm assuming
that
this
list
is something that you and your staff prepare. So I was just curious about, I thought we had the qualified work of art. What's different is the reference to the domicile factors, which we have both in the estate tax and in the income tax article.
Right.
Correct.
Senator Russ, that's right. So ignore this. And he said exactly what you said.
I know. I just
and he's
just
working
to make sure
off,
that this isn't.
Right. No, we got that. That's okay. Ignore that. Okay. But at your request, we are working off the side-by-side and the bill.
Yeah.
So that's what we should all look at. Don't look at this. Look at the request of the side-by-side and the bill.
Except these are the topics. That's
yeah. Right. So. And some of those we'll bring up and some we won't.
Okay.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next provision that's in the House bill, and this is the same in the Senate bill, is Section 16 of the House bill, and this relates to the effective date of the three-year clawback or look-back rule for gifts that are made in that three-year window before someone dies who's subject to the estate tax. In Tax Bill 1, that change was made, and it was effective simply for estates of decedents dying after December 31, 2013. That creates the potential that gifts made up to 3 years before that, so looking all the way back to 2011, could be pulled back into the estate. The original provision that imposed the look-back rule in the 2013 bill actually took effect for gifts made after June 30, 2013. And so what this change does is to amend the effective date in Tax Bill 1 to limit that three-year look back to only gifts that were made after June 30, 2013, so that we're not reaching back beyond what the effective date was in the 2013 tax bill. Section 17 is also the same in both bills, and this is on page 61 of the House bill. This provides a definition of taxable gifts for individuals who died in that window between June 30, 2013 and December 31st of 2013. With the repeal of the gift tax, there was not a definition of taxable gift, and so this sort of temporary, uncodified provision that defines gift by reference to the old gift tax law, including the way the Department of Revenue interpreted it, is essentially stands in that place so that when we apply the three-year look-back rule to folks that died in that window, that we have a definition of taxable gift. So those are the estate. Now there's an amendment which I believe we have copies of.
I think it was passed out.
It was okay. You have that, which is the A58 amendment.
So Senator Russ, you want to move the A58?
Yes, I'm happy to do that, Madam Chair.
Senator Russ moves the A58. Mr. Michael, you want to tell us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are two provisions in this amendment. It's easiest to deal with the second provision first, which just corrects the cross-reference that was in Tax Bill 1 to refer to the right section. Essentially, what we were doing in Tax Bill 1 was to move a subdivision from one section to be a standalone section, and in doing that, we failed to change the internal reference to point back to the section we moved it from, and so that's what this does. The language on lines 1.2 through 1.5 relate to Q-tip, Minnesota-only Q-tip property. That acronym refers to qualified terminable interest property that married couples have the option of doing. This essentially leaves a life interest to the surviving spouse, and that life interest qualifies for the marital deduction so that it's not taxed when the first spouse dies, but it is to be taxed when the second spouse dies. Now, our tax is keyed off of the federal tax definitions, and there are instances where individuals don't have a federal tax filing obligation because their estate is not larger than $5.34 million. And the tax bill 1 authorizes them to do Minnesota-only Q-tip elections. Now, under federal law, the Q-tip, when the second spouse dies, gets added back into the federal gross estate. But because we're picking up federal gross estate from the federal for these people who have Minnesota-only Q-tip elections, that property would not necessarily be in the definition of federal gross estate. So what this provision does is just to make it clear that for someone who has a Minnesota-only Q-tip, the federal gross estate is increased by the amount when the second spouse dies by that life interest. And this is important so that for two reasons. One, we want to make sure that when the second spouse dies, if the sum of the decedent's value that they own that's actually in the normal federal gross estate plus the Q-tip exceeds our taxable threshold, that they have, one, a filing obligation, and two, a tax obligation, and that's what this ensures. I think the current language in the law probably reaches, you could reach that result by construing it. This just makes it clear that that is the case.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Michaels, so there could be scenarios where people would have a filing obligation and an obligation to pay some tax, Would there also be scenarios where there would be a filing obligation but no tax would be due?
Madam Chair, or Senator Scoy, yes, there can be instances like that can occur because they may have given their property away in a way that reduces the taxable estate. Take a simple example. Someone has an estate of $2 million and leaves $1.5 million to charity, for example. And in that case, they have a filing obligation, but because their charitable donation brings the total value of the estate in that hypothetical down to $500,000, which is well under our 1.2, they would not actually have to pay tax, but they would have to file.
Madam Chair, we had an opportunity to review this amendment earlier today, and we're comfortable with this. So have we adopted the amendment?
We have no. Mr. Chair, you're okay with this? Ready on the rest A58 amendment.
And Madam Chair, we'll just do like we did on our amendments to our sections, that we're just adopting the amendment, not the provision. But if we adopt the provision, this goes along with it.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes. I think we might be able to adopt some provisions on the estate tonight because they're the same.
And, Madam Chair, the only thing we would like to do before we adopt is we'd like to talk a little bit about domicile.
Sure.
Before we adopt, but I think we should put the amendment on, and then I was going to ask if we could talk a little bit about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. All those in favor of the A58 say aye.
Aye.
Opposing nay, the A58 is adopted. Senator Scoy, and yes, we want to talk through your provision on domicile.
Is Mr. Michaels done?
I think I'm not sure.
Maybe not.
Let's ask.
Yeah, I was just looking. I don't know.
Mr. Michael, did you have more before we hear from the Senate?
That I believe I've gone through all of the House estate tax provisions. So
thank you very much.
So
I think I'm going to turn to Senator Gazelka.
Senator
Madam
Gazelka.
Chair. Before we go there, I just would like you to contemplate that I think the Senate position is actually better for people who are planning on staying and residing in Minnesota. And, you know, the inverse is true of these provisions, that they might help somebody prove that you're a Minnesota resident, but the inverse of that is that they could prove that somebody's not a Minnesota resident also. And we'd like you to think about this in that vein, where this would be helpful to people planning on remaining in Minnesota, but probably not helpful to people who are trying to leave the state. And so
I can give an example if you like.
Do you want to go do first?
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, I think the case gets made clearer of what decisions are made. A number of years ago, we removed from the factors determining Minnesota residency where you made your charitable contributions. That was not allowed to be a factor. And so when that was removed, regardless of where you made your residence, charitable contributions did not enter in. So if someone was a Minnesota resident, lived in Minnesota a long time, belonged to a church, kept their membership at that church, but moved to Florida, did not join a church, but was there, made all of their contributions, their charitable contributions that they were going to make to a religious institution, to a church in Florida. They could not use the fact that they were making all of their contributions to a church in Florida to establish residency in Florida. It was totally totally irrelevant. And that is, and just as, you know, belonging to a church before that law was changed, if you belonged here instead of somewhere else, that could be used as a factor to determine Minnesota residency. So it's a, once a factor is gone, it is, it's not to be considered to determine Minnesota residency, and nor to determine that you're not a Minnesota resident. So
So the issue becomes, and I think then that's the facts of it with regard to charitable contributions, and I think Senator Gazelka can explain what the impact is, the other side of that coin with regard to financial professionals.
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, thank you. This started out, my background is the insurance and financial service industry, and so I have a lot of contacts, and I was up north, and a financial planner came up to me and said, I'm losing a client. And he said, I can't believe you guys have this in law that they have to divest themselves of their Minnesota CPA, their Minnesota financial planner, et cetera. And he said, this guy is moving out of the state, and he wants to make sure that it's clear that he's not considered a Minnesota resident. And so and then I went to did my taxes, and I asked my accountant, do we have any problems with this? In fact, we are. I did an op-ed, and I got some other people write it into me, and I sent them to Senator Rest and Senator Skoy because it's, I know that's an anecdotal way to talk about it, but it is happening. And for me personally, more than I've ever seen before. And what the argument I would make is if somebody is deciding that they're not going to be a Minnesota resident, that means less than 6 months. If we say they've got to be here at least five, if they're here 5 months or longer, then they're going to move to five. I mean, so if they've made that decision, we're going to lose them. And my argument here is, why do we want to penalize our local Minnesota businesses that are here staying, paying taxes, and then we would lose the revenues that would come into them and benefit the state? And so I handed out the list of all the different things, frankly. Wouldn't be a bad idea to take a look at what we actually decide for being a resident, not for tonight necessarily, but just so you can see there's a lot of things on there. But this one in particular, I know both the accountant representatives and the insurance representatives are saying that this is a factor. So it's not just what I've been experiencing. When they saw it in there, they immediately agreed, and I had a chance to talk to Representative Davids because you're in similar industry and you can make your own comments. But it truly is a factor, and by leaving this in, we're not penalizing that guy leaving. We're penalizing the folks that are staying. So there.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is happening across the state, and for the life of me, I cannot figure out why we would want to lose the business that the financial planners and the CPAs are making, because we do tax them here. And so it's, I live in southeastern Minnesota, and I just found out this spring that I lost. I called him up, and I said, well, you'll be back in March. He says, no, it's going to be June 1st. And I thought the light went on right away. I said, oh, I know what he's doing. He's buying a pack of bubble gum every day at the 7-Eleven in Tampa Bay so that he can prove he's a Florida resident. And so he hasn't left me yet, because I can't imagine anyone possibly for any reason wanting to leave me.
Neither can I.
But he may very quickly. And so, and of course, since this affects all financial planners, it's not a conflict of interest for me, so I'm going to vote on these things. But that being said, for the life of me, I can't figure out why we would hurt Minnesota businesses that have built up a relationship over 30 or 40 years with these people, know everything inside and out, whether it be the financial planning part or the CPA part. I think that we would lose revenue if we didn't do this, because this is going to become a bigger factor with people leaving their Minnesota CPA firms and their Minnesota financial planners if we don't address this.
And Madam Chair, if I can,
yes, please.
The financial planner I'm talking about, he flies all over the country for clients that live in Colorado and other places, because once you develop a relationship with somebody and you've trusted them with your, it's really the core of your life, one of the cores of your life as far as your assets, what's important to you. You don't want to leave that planner, that person. And so that's why they, cutting this relationship for them is a big deal, but it isn't necessarily because they, they may be a resident of another state, but they still want to keep our businesses here.
Madam Chair, we would like to include this in the estate tax provisions. It's in the article, and we're wondering if you would be look favorably upon that. Move this.
I would not look favorably on that, but before I kind of talk about my thoughts, I do want to ask the Department of Revenue, I don't know who that should be, to give your reaction to this proposal. I mean, maybe a little history about folks who aren't just worried about this industry. I don't know, is it 26 factors, and how long have they been in place, and sort of why does the department need factors, and what's going on? You know, for me, we all pay higher taxes when we make it easier for people to change their residency and kind of avoid the Minnesota tax. But if you could kind of, aside from the editorializing, if someone could talk about why these factors are important and why Minnesotans who are here benefit from them.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, well, I guess I would start to let you know that there are 26 factors, and they are put into a rule, Minnesota rules. They've been around since at least 1981, and they do make it easier for taxpayers by putting the rule out there in the open, as opposed to having all of these factors in common law. So before the rule was enacted, you'd have to go into common law and read numerous cases to understand what kinds of things the courts looked to determine your intent about whether or not you've changed your domicile to another state. So the 26-factor test was intended to be helpful to taxpayers. And as you know, no one factor is determinative. They are all considered together. And none of them are exclusive. It's not an exclusive list. They're determined together, and no one factor is determinative. I think you should know that 95% of audits in this area are resolved at the audit level. Only 5% move on to administrative appeals, where they are almost entirely resolved. There are a few cases that make their way through the court system, and recently there were two higher-profile cases, Maurer and Larson, that I think have brought this issue of relationships with attorneys and accountants sort of into the public discussion. But you should know that Maurer and Larson did not change the department's approach to residency. The 26-factor test remains. No one factor is determinative. And, in fact, this is not the first time that a court has considered, as one of many, many facts before it, a relationship with an accountant or an attorney. I know there was at least one case in 2008 by the name of Dreiling that also looked at this as one of the many facts that are considered.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Starr. The Senate provision, that includes CPAs, financial planners, and attorneys. Is there anyone else in that provision that's included?
I'm sorry. Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Davis, that's on page 51, but you're right. It's attorneys, certified public accountants, and financial advisors within or without the state.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I wouldn't necessarily make the assumption that this is going to make it, if we remove this factor, that would make it easier for people to leave the state. Because I think at some level, if people are buying packs of gum in Tampa Bay, and then they also get rid of their Minnesota financial planner and hire somebody in Florida, then this could be used as a factor determining that they're not a Minnesota resident also. And so it works both ways. And so we just think that, you know, these folks are working here in Minnesota, and if we can get them some business from these folks, we think it would be worth considering.
Well, I guess, Senator Scoy, in hearing you say that, wouldn't it also be the case that it would make it harder for people here to prove residency if this weren't
acted? Well, it works both ways. Yes, that's absolutely true,
Madam Chair.
But there are other factors.
Yes, Senator.
Madam Chair, it's easy to prove residency with a driver's license, and you're here with a job, and there's many factors on that sheet where it's so obvious they're residents. It's if they choose to not be residents, and honestly, the tax code has changed dramatically the last couple of years. with either things that did happen or things that were going or could have happened, you know, like the snowbird tax. And there's just different things that I think what's happened is the people that are in these situations are typically very wealthy people, and they are more than ever making conscious decisions to make the move. And all I'm saying is we're not going to stop them if that's the decision they're going to make. But we can reduce its impact in Minnesota, and that's because they're smart people. If they make that choice, whatever we change here, they're going to make whatever choices they need to do. And the word is out there now through their CPAs and others that this is a factor that you have to be aware of, and it's having an impact.
So, Senator Gazelka, and if this became law, what would the word be from their CPAs?
Madam Chair, from the CPAs?
Yeah. Well, if you enacted what you're proposing, now what would the CPAs do?
Well, now they might only be gone 6 months instead of more, like permanently, and now they might keep their CPA and keep their financial planner. And, you know, that's you know, the point is I'm in an area that there's a lot of the Gull Lake area, a lot of what they call cabins that are million-dollar homes, and it's people that many of them are gone through the winter, and they are gone for more than 6 months, and they know what they need to do to have that benefit. And I'm simply saying they're going to do their decision. We're not going to stop them. We can't stop them from moving. But we can stop some of the loss to our local businesses that still benefit from their assets.
Senator, yes, Senator Scott,
thank you, Madam Chair. And I think we appreciate the opportunity to make our case on the domicile. I don't want to go on and on and on tonight with it, but maybe we should just move on and see if we could come back and revisit these provisions later.
Sure.
I understand, Madam Chair, we're going to have to start adopting some provisions pretty quick because we're going to try to wrap this thing up. So,
Senator Gazelka.
I'm good, thank you.
You know, I guess I would just add, Senator Scoy, you know, I just want everyone to think about, you know, this is just a line drawing exercise, and what's next? Go through the factors. You could draw the line anywhere. As Ms. Starr explained, they're not determinative. You've explained it works both ways. I think there's a lot of things to think about. And, of course, we all want everybody who has a job in Minnesota to keep every single client they have always forever. But there are trade-offs here with taxpayers, and we'll just continue talking about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Scoy, do you want to – everything else was the same, I think. You heard? Other than that provision.
And, Madam Chair, you know, if we're going to start adopting all the sames, I'm fine with that. But we'll carry through and kind of keep that as a policy then? Or what are you thinking of there?
Well, I wasn't thinking money. You want to do that tonight, money?
Well, we certainly should be talking about it. We probably
sure.
Adopt the money.
You know, I thought we'd talk about things but not work through the money. I mean, in that I'm fine not adopting any of them. I just heard Mr. Michael tell a bunch of us that they're the same.
And I guess I think I'm going to be okay adopting those as long as
I'm
you
fine.
Have an understanding that we're going to come back and revisit the domicile provision later on in some context.
I'm okay not adopting.
Are you?
Okay. Well, I'm not. I'm not comfortable moving until we have a better understanding of how we're going to proceed through the evening, Senator Scoy. We can come back to it if you don't
okay.
want.
Great. We'll move on.
Okay?
Let's wait. The microdistillery tax credit is what we want to talk about. But we can't do that. Representative Dabney is at an event for his children at the moment, and he'll be back. Maybe we can do one that's not his provision. We talked, the Carlton County is also in the property tax division, so I'll hold on that for now. Firefighter retirement, we should probably do this one. This is not the volunteer firefighter tax credit. This is almost a technical problem that I'm not sure who on staff we should ask to tell us about it. Ms. Dalton? And may I just ask Senator Squire, are you familiar with this issue at all?
I am not.
Okay. Ms. Dalton, you want to come to the table just so people... related to a bill we passed last year.
All of us.
Article 1.
Something back. And Ms. Dalton, you'll have to tell us what page of the side-by-side and as you come up here, or maybe someone can just say it in the mic if you know where it is.
I think it's on page 1.
Page 1.
Section 4. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's House Section 4 on page 1, and then there is also House Section 13 on page 3. But we can talk about them individually.
Can you pull your mic closer, please, Ms. Dalton? Right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what Section 4, basically, both of these provisions were brought from the Pension Commission.
Hang on a minute. They're not listening. We'll wait.
Sorry.
Okay. No problem. We just want you to hear it. She just said something I didn't know. It came from the Pension Commission. So, Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, last year there was some changes made in the omnibus tax bill to pensions as it related to firefighters. And unfortunately, one group of firefighters, the independent nonprofit firefighting corporations, were accidentally left out of the language. This isn't going to change how much money is going to the firefighters. It is going to include them in there. And for the first year, they're going to get the money that they should have gotten last year, as well as what they get this year. Everyone's in agreement on this, and then next year it just works the way it's supposed to.
Senator Scott, before you tell me, I have talked to no one about this provision, no lobbyists, no one's talked to me about it. This is Senator Atkins had carried the bill, and so I don't know how the group of folks came to know about this, and I don't know if we can just find out first from Ms. Dalton. When you said this group of independent, who are those? Do we know? Do we have cities and names and how many and what kind of communities? I honestly don't know.
Madam Chair, most cities have their own firefighting, or they do a joint powers firefighting department. Okay. But some cities and townships contract with essentially what's a independent nonprofit firefighting organization. It's just another way that the cities are providing fire protection services instead of these organizations being actually owned, operated by a government or under a joint powers. They are a nonprofit organization, and then the cities and townships contract with them. They are part of the volunteer firefighters pension. They've always been part of the volunteers firefighters pension. It's just that when we did the supplemental provision last year, they were left out accidentally.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Senator Madam Chair, I was approached by this earlier during the session. It was a Senator Pappas from the Pension Committee, Senator Ress's co-author. I don't know why it isn't in our bill, but it's not. It was never heard.
Senator Ress.
I do think it was an oversight in the bill last year, but I wonder if Ms. Pollack has had a chance to review this language or whoever is the appropriate person in Senate Council.
Just see what she says.
Ms. Pollack, sure, and we can just adopt it later and let your staff take a look at it. But Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, I have had a chance to look at it to the extent that the language was reviewed for purposes of the side-by-side, and I see no concern or issue with it. And I agree it was an oversight in the provisions that were adopted in the tax bill last year.
Okay, so let's
keep
going.
Come back to it before the end of the night.
I think we should keep track of some of these that we're going to come back to. So that one, and we'll take some recesses. We don't have to try to figure this out live through the mic, so we can have recess and people can think about them a little bit. Okay, so that was the firefighter one. Typhoon, Philippines. Ms. Representative Davids.
Madam Chair, there is also a second provision, Section 13, that goes with it. And that's actually the section that
What page of the side-by-side?
It's on page 3 of the side-by-side. And this is the part that basically says we're going to reduce everybody else's payment a little for 1 year to make up the payment that these
organizations didn't get last year, and then we go back to everyone getting the right payment in next year.
I have a question.
Senator West.
Mr. Alton and Ms. Pollack, the dates, we often have issues that come up with inadvertent placement of dates that end up not working. Have you reviewed these dates to make sure that the October 1st, 2013, and the October 1st, 2014 date works for implementing this provision?
Madam Chair, Senator Russ, I actually did talk to the person in revenue who administers this provision, and she okayed the dates, but you may want to check with the commissioner and make sure that they're also okay with it.
Commissioner, and if you all don't know, that's what recesses are for. So, Commissioner, Mr. Cummings?
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, the provision was reviewed by the Department of Revenue, the people within our division, and they found that this is identical to what is in the omnibus retirement bill, but they were it is in two locations. But there is, Madam Chair, there is one change that does need to be made on line 6.17. 356G should be stricken and replaced with 353G. 356G is... does not exist. So that is just a technical update that needs to be done. And once that is done, then it will be identical with, it will be moving the same as it is in the.
So instead of 35G, it's supposed to be 353G.
Instead of 356G, it should be 353G.
Could you say what page and line that is again in the bill?
Page 6.
This would be in the House bill, it would be page 6, line 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's...
3-5 what? 3?
Yeah. In the bill, it is 356G, and that should be stricken and replaced with 353G.
So we don't ever have to talk about that again? Can we have a motion to adopt that oral amendment?
Yes, I move it. Yeah.
Okay, so Senator Skoy moves the oral amendment as stated by Mr. Cummings. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. That amendment is adopted, but not the base provision. So thank you for that.
And we'll come back to that later tonight.
Yep. Typhoon Philippines. Why do I think that's related to you, Representative Davids?
That was our bill, Senator Rest and myself. And basically what that did, it said during a two-week period in 2014, if you made contributions, donations to typhoon relief for the Philippines, that you could take it off in your 2013 taxes. Now, maybe Ms. Manzi could tell us about the dates. I think it was just a two-week period. They're trying to get some more donations to that very needy cause, and people wanted to take it off on their 2013 tax. We've done this before, and I think we did it for the Haiti quake and tsunami or whatever.
Or the East.
Yeah. Representative Abrams and I did that in the past, too.
Ms. Manzi, are you just simply nodding? Is that what we need to know? Ms. Manzi is nodding. Perfect description.
Maybe do we have the two-week period that applied to, or does that really matter?
Ms. Manzi.
I think we're past it already.
Madam Chair, that two-week period has ended. It was after enactment of the federal law, which I believe was on March 25th of this year, either the 25th or the 26th, and then it ran through April 15th of this year.
So, Madam Chair, this is basically conforming with what the feds had done.
Okay, so any questions on that? Commissioner, please.
No, Madam Chair, and there's the cost of this would be negligible. It was such a small period, small number of people, so that there's nothing really for numbers there to put in there.
Okay, great. So we'll come back to that one hopefully tonight. Dakota Ramsey, we're looking for Representative Dabney to be here. Transfer on death of title centers going.
The Dakota Ramsey provisions, we were wondering if we could talk about those when we're talking about some of the housing issues that we're dealing with in TIF. I think both of those are housing related projects, one with regard to transit stations and the other with some kind of housing credits. And then we have Medina housing TIF, and we have a pilot project for workforce housing. And I don't know if we could just kind of bundle that.
We can, together. Except these two are not TIFs.
No, they're not TIFs. I know that.
And it's really not for a transit station either. So we probably do need to talk about them.
Yeah,
housing credits.
Tax credits that they can use housing next to a transit station.
It's the federal credits.
The federal credits.
It's partially it, yes.
Partially it. But, well, when Representative Dabney's here, we can talk about those.
Yes. A transfer on death of title, motor vehicle. Do we want to have who from the Senate?
It's my bill.
Senator Rest.
And it's Representative Carlson, but are these...
I can explain what the difference is, Madam Chair, if you like.
Okay. I'll still ask the House to tell me about the House Provision Center.
This provision came to Representative Carlson and me from a constituent whose spouse died, and she found that they had one car, and she found that the title did not automatically transfer to her. The car had to go through probate. It was a lot of, I mean, it came to her eventually, but it was a headache with regard to the red tape. And so she wanted to know why, since other things, titles can transfer on death, why not an automobile? So we started exploring that and found that there is a transfer on death designation on the title of a car in 12, 13 states. So we put the bill in and found out that we wanted to make sure as it passed through the committees that the transfer to a spouse or to any other natural person beneficiary was not a taxable event. And so that's why the bill ended up coming to the tax committee, so it wouldn't be sales tax, because otherwise you do pay sales tax when you sell to a relative, for example, or you should. And then we found that there also were possible liens that would be placed on such assets by either the Department of Revenue or the Department of Human Services. And so to get belts and suspenders with regard to that, those liabilities, we included language to that effect in both for both Health and Human Services and the Department of Revenue. It is my understanding that the language that's in the Senate then has no. We've been assured from the Department of Human Services has no cost with regard to the House provision. It, without the language relative to the Department of Human Services, it can still work, but it has a cost of over $100,000. So we would recommend the Senate language. The actual result is not different except for the cost.
Okay. I'll move the Senate language. You ready to adopt this one? All those in favor or for other discussion? Commissioner? Unless you're giving me the look that's a huge error. I mean, members, I just want to be realistic about what's before us in our time frame. And I don't think we need the minutia of every provision. But I think people who need it need to have those conversations. And whether it's in their offices, they can request House and Senate staff, commissioner, everybody can come. And I understand we have a timeline. I actually think I have a little more time than you think we do. But at this pace, we will not make that timeline. I'm just saying, I got a look there, so I'm ready to adopt this one, but I'm going to ask the House staff why I don't want to move the Senate language, so please.
Madam Chair, I think the issue with this is basically whether or not the language that was added for the Department of Human Services and the Department of Revenue gives those two entities the same status as secured creditors. Normally, when you have a certificate of title they would have the same, I believe the way the language reads, they're intending to have the same rights as the bank who has a security interest in the vehicle. Normally, on a certificate of title, if you have a bank loan, there will be noted on the title that the bank has a security interest. So if you're purchasing a car from someone and you see that title, you realize that the bank's interest has to be satisfied before you get clear title. And so you're on notice of that. What the Department of Human Service requested, and apparently the Department of Revenue is also, when they came to the House, they asked for this. But the concern was that they're not going to be noted on the certificate of title. And so if you have an innocent purchaser that buys from someone who gained title this way, essentially they will be unable to rely on that certificate of title giving them bona fide interest without going and searching to see if there's an MA lien or now a tax lien as well. And so I think you need to think about whether you want to do that. Yes, there's going to be a cost because DHS says, because this makes transfer so much easier, there may be instances where the heirs can sell a car, consume the money that they get. DHS has always got the right to go after the heir for the money. But this would, I believe, also allow them to go after the purchaser of the vehicle and not just the heir. And so I think that's what you need to we need to clarify that either by saying, look, this doesn't affect an innocent purchaser, or you need to adopt the house provision if you want to keep the sort of the integrity of the certificate of title.
Okay, we won't take that one, and we will have a subgroup go work on that during a recess.
And, well, Senator Slide. And Madam Chair, I would like Ms. McQuay to be involved in that since she's the one who's been doing the direct negotiation on this with the Department of Human Services.
And Ms. McQuay, could you tell us what the cost of that is? It was $116.
Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll refer you to page 5 of the spreadsheet. Line 91, there's a $114 million cost in the first biennium, $233,000 in the second.
$44,000. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. McQuay. And whoever wants to work on that can work with Ms. McQuay and anyone who wants to work on that provision. Is that okay?
And Madam Chair, we'll figure that out hopefully tonight too.
Okay, sounds good. So next, Greater Minnesota Angel. Representative Davids, do you want to have Ms. Manzi talk about this first? Representative Simonson carried this bill, and this are these changes to the Angel credit. Representative Davids, Ms. Manzi.
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, these two provisions are on page 18 of the side-by-side. And they are
Ms. Manzi, can you wait just a sec? Hang on, because we want people to be able to hear you. What you want something else?
I apologize, Madam Chair.
It's fine.
There was a question about whether we adopted the Typhoon Philippines provision. No, we did not. Sorry. And why did we not do that again? Did I ask some kind of? Oh, okay.
That's pretty obvious. Okay. So, Ms. Manzi, on the Greater Minnesota Angel.
Yes, Madam Chair. These two provisions are on page 18 of the side-by-side, and they are on. They begin on page 46 of the House bill. It's the first two sections of the income article.
Sorry, the page number again?
46 of the House bill and page 18 of the side-by-side. The first section adds a fourth criteria to allow a business to qualify to receive investments that will then be eligible for the angel investment credit. The fourth criteria is to allow business to qualify if they have as their primary business activity researching and developing a proprietary product, process, or service in the fields of agriculture, tourism, forestry, mining, manufacturing, or transportation. Under the current law, a business can qualify if it is researching, developing, or producing a new proprietary technology for use in those fields. This would extend it to allow them, if they are researching and developing not just a new proprietary technology, but also a product, process, or service in those fields. And the thinking here was that this might allow an additional number of businesses in Greater Minnesota to be able to qualify for investments that could then get the credit. The second section sets aside a portion of the $15 million that's provided for the Angel Investment Credit in 2015 and 2016 for investments in either Greater Minnesota businesses or women and minority-owned businesses. Under current law, there's going to be $15 million in each of those years for the Angel Investment Credit, and this would reserve half of that amount, or $7.5 million, through September 30th of the calendar year. Any amount that had not been allocated to investments in Greater Minnesota businesses or women or minority-owned businesses by September 30th would then go back into the general pool for investments in any other businesses in Minnesota. This would also require the Commissioner of Deed to develop a plan for making sure that that reserved amount was indeed claimed by investments and businesses in Greater Minnesota, and to report on the attainment of the goal to do that as part of their annual report on the Angel Investment Credit. And I think I would add, and Ms. Templin maybe would want to speak to this, that there's no additional revenue impact for this item, and I do not believe that there's any fiscal note impact for this item.
Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Ms. Mazzi is correct.
Okay, so can I then, there are questions on these from members?
Mm-hmm. I just again with Ms. Pollack, have you reviewed this language?
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, I'm sorry, I was having a conversation with Ms. McQuay about another issue.
About the adding this language. It parallels what was done with the high-tech language in terms of, looks like, in terms of adding process product process and service that wasn't there previously with the agriculture, tourism, and so on, but now it's just adding that. It seems to me to be innocuous with regard to the language of the Angel Investment Credit.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Rest,
I'm looking at Article 4,
yes.
Section 1 of the House bill, and just wanting to make sure that we're just paralleling the language with regard to high-tech products with the other products. And there are two sections with regard to high-tech, and they're just adding a similar second section, it looked like to me, with regard to the agriculture and tourism. I just want to make sure I'm reading that right.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, yes.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, I would move we adopt
Senator
those.
Rest.
She moved adoption.
Of which provision?
House Article 4, Sections 1 and 2.
Other questions? Thoughts from the department? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The rest motion is adopted. And after that, do you want to talk about your Senate Angel Investment Credit change, Senator Scoy?
Sure.
It's just a section 1 on page 18 of the side-by-side.
Mm-hmm. I need to get to it.
Is that Ms. Pollack?
Ms. Pollack, yes.
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair and members, section 1 of the Senate Article 3. It is on page 18 of the side-by-side, and then beginning at the very bottom of page 45 through page 46 of the Senate bill. This is striking some language that Deed has stated was not necessary to their administration of the credit.
Madam Chair, we think it's technical, but check with staff.
Okay, so I will. What's the motion then we need for that? Is there two? Senator Rest, what were the two, or Senator Scoy, the other two things we need to move?
That I just moved?
The new ones from the Senate?
It's Senate Article 3,
Section 1.
And we should look to make sure there's no conflict.
And while we're looking, Ms. Manzi, is there a conflict between these provisions? Madam Chair, members of the committee, these provisions amend different sections of statute, I believe, and I believe there is only one section involved in this, and Ms. Pollack could confirm that.
Ms. Pollack, were you referencing? I thought I heard you say page 45 of the side-by-side.
44 of the Senate bill.
Oh, okay. That's why I thought there was two. I apologize for that. Okay. Is that so?
It is
everyone
different.
Understand
it's
this?
Different language.
So these, none of these have a price tag.
No, they're not price tag.
Okay, so on the rest motion for Article 3, Section 1 of the Senate bill, Angel Investment Credit, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted. That was next on our list. Perfect. Thank you. Senate Data Centers language, Representative Davids.
Fine piece of legislation, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, I think we have a handout for this.
Do we need it?
No, maybe not. If you're fine with it.
I mean, I just...
Yep, nope.
Representative Davids.
Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton. Do we want the Senate language?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, members of the House, yes, after reviewing the language, I think you do want the Senate language.
Okay. Members, there's no price tag on this one either. So, Representative Davids, what's your motion?
I will move, Madam Chair, Senate Article 2, Section 10, comma 25.
Senator Ress, you okay with that? I believe this is your Representative Davids and Senator Ress bill.
That's correct.
As I understand it. Are you okay with that, Senator Ress?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Everyone understand that? Commissioner? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted. We thought we could do
may
the...
May I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Were any of the amendments, this is to Senate staff, any of the amendments that we adopted the other evening when we were going through provisions adopted to either to Article 2, Section 10 or 25?
Madam Chair, no. None of those amendments pertain to these provisions.
No, I just wanted trying to get their attention.
Senator Scoia is trying to get someone's attention, but I don't know who. Okay. So, Senator Scoia...
I'm just going to check. I think we have an amendment that we need to work on for the minerals article.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Just what I was going to ask.
No, that's okay.
You know, and I think on that one, if anybody has an amendment, then I'll want to check with our rangers. But I think we were thinking that we would just take your Senate minerals article. But if we're going to change it, then I don't want to adopt
it
tonight.
Madam Chair, I'll tell you what I told the folks to do is to take the amendment over to the House folks that represent the range and let them talk to you about it.
Right.
Because I would rather do it that way than you and I discuss it and then have somebody come along later and say we didn't do something like they want. Jake
can
go work it out themselves.
Well, so do you want to hold on that?
We need to hold on
you
that.
You know, the only thing I can say is, I'll just ask the conferees, do people want to walk through the Senate Minerals article? Not this new amendment, the Senate Minerals article. Is there an interest in anyone hearing anything about that?
No.
Mm-hmm. Anybody out there? Okay, because I'll just say the House's intent is just to take the Senate minerals article.
And we'll let the range House members and
senators. And now if there's a change, then we might not feel that way.
Yep.
But just know we were just going to take this.
Okay.
And we really don't want to walk through it.
Don't either.
We all read it.
Good.
Thank you. We talked about the stipend for volunteer firefighters already, so we kind of know we have differences. I don't think we need to talk about that anymore. Ms. Manzi, you're giving me the wave.
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, I believe that Ms. Locke and Mr. Furness have an author's amendment to the stipend for volunteer firefighters that you suggested you would want to consider adopting to put this in the order you would like it for future consideration. The amendment is language relating to how the stipend would be administered that was proposed by the Department of Revenue. It expands on language that was suggested in the memo that they presented to the conference committee. And they worked out an agreement with the Department of Public Safety about how to administer the stipends. and that's what's in the amendment. So it just redraws the section there. And if you'd like me to go through it, I could highlight the changes, or you could just read it and see what's in there.
You know, and so if we can adopt this to get our provision the order we want it, we know that you are not agreeing to this provision, and we are not agreeing to your volunteer firefighter. We just want them both in the order we want.
Absolutely.
So that's the Senator Rest moves the A56. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A56 is adopted, and then we don't need to. We've covered those firefighter provisions, so we're not ready to move on that yet.
The
coin and the coin operated costs money, doesn't it?
It does cost money. It is the same. It does cost money.
Okay. So we'll move on. No money.
And that is one that you might want to make a note of on your list, that we did adopt an amendment to that, the A53 amendment the other evening, in response to requests from the department. So you have it probably somewhere in your packets. Just when we get to that, we need to be cognizant that there was an amendment adopted for that already, to get it in the language that's acceptable and it can be administered.
Okay, thanks. On the production property definition, bins and tanks, was there money in that one?
Well, Madam
yes.
Chair,
Mr.
There,
Chair.
There really isn't on some of the language, but you have transition aid for this. And to be honest with you, we looked at your transition aid proposal. We looked at the ramifications for those communities, and I think we're going to agree with you on the transition aid need.
So but you want to wait because it's money?
I just want you to know that I think you kind of come along on that.
Okay, so let's just hold on that, and we all understand that, but we'll just have to, that's a spreadsheet.
But just
item.
So everybody know, I think we'll be ready to move that when we get the money sorted out.
Okay, thank you. So nonprofit exemption, is this the one that the governor proposed, and the House and Senate have different versions? Senator Skoy.
I think, Madam Chair, I think this is the booster club thing that
yes.
the governor proposed, going from 10,000 to 20,000, and then we made it a... you know, so that they were get the credit all the way up to 20,000 and then not above kind of deal. And maybe one of the staff wants to say what the differences
right.
are between the two.
So it's Ms. Dalton probably, and is it
Ms. Pollock?
Ms. Pollock. So why don't each of you tell us kind of how our bills are different? Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe the bills are identical except for the fact that the House actually has an inflator on the 20,000, so we don't experience what we've experienced
the inflator.
Under the current law. The current $10,000 limit was set in law back in the 80s and was never revisited, which is why we've got a number of nonprofit organizations that are really running into this cap now. And if we put an inflator in it, then we won't have to keep revisiting it. And that's the only difference. Oh, well, there's also an effective date difference, and actually the Senate, I believe, has it starting December 31st, and I think that makes sense to have it actually start at the beginning of a calendar year instead of in the middle of a calendar year.
So Ms. Pollock?
Madam Chair and members, yes, that's correct. The Senate provision does not have the inflator provision, and it is effective December 31st.
So we think, sounds like the Senate date is better. Your date is better. Mr. Commissioner and Commissioner, did the governor propose this? This is, I don't know what the Senate did, but the House just got the idea by reading the governor's proposal. We'd like to take credit for it, but it was actually the governor who brought it to the House's attention. Did the governor have an inflator? I don't.
Did we read? No. Madam Chair, members, we did not have an inflator originally. That was part of the came about as part of the discussions we had with the industry and all these booster groups. And as we've been talked about, there's a concern that if we don't revisit this now, it's just always going to. We'll be bumping up against that limit in the future again. So that's why there was thought that we might want to have an inflator on this particular provision.
The Senate really has told us they don't like inflators.
Not particularly fun. Well, Madam Chair, I mean, if it's an issue that we're going to bump up to it, maybe we could just raise the threshold a little bit and go beyond 20,000. It's relative, but it is a cost. So I don't know what we're going to do with that.
Is the cost? What is the cost for the 20? Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, the cost of the inflator was added in the House bill as an amendment, and when that amendment
What's the cost?
What's without the inflator?
It's the same.
Is it?
So what is that number that is the same? Really like the Senate provision now.
Well, and Madam Chair, the reason we did the date when it was is because it lines up with the Booster Club's fiscal year, its calendar year. Yeah. And, well, it's a cost, and we're going to spend some money. I don't know.
So little.
Okay. Well, it's up to you. I'm happy to move the Senate booster language. Okay. I'll move. I've got to find where it is.
To Section 13 and 14.
Senate Article 2, Section 13 and 14.
Yes.
Boosters.
Madam Chair.
Who said that? Mr. Cummings?
Madam Chair,
yes,
in
Mr.
Section...
Cummings.
In Section 14, the provision should be the date following final enactment, because this is just a clarification on how we currently administer the law.
Senator Scoy incorporates that into his motion.
It is.
I'm sorry, would you say it again?
Let's have... I thought it was Ms. Pollack. Okay. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, that language, that effective date that he's talking about is actually in the Senate bill.
We're moving the Senate language, so okay. I guess we don't need that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there's two dates, one for the implementation of the language and one for the change with regard to the money.
Is everybody clear on that one?
So what's the motion?
Okay.
And I don't know who gets credit in the Senate for thinking of that for these groups. You know, haven't we all been like the president of the Booster Club for our kids? And, you know, you try, this stuff's crazy.
Actually,
I'm glad someone found it. On our side, we just got the idea from the governor.
Actually, Madam Chair, it's former Senator Schwab, now Keller, brought this to us.
She's sitting right there.
She's sitting here?
Okay.
Smiling.
Yeah, there she is.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so everyone understand that. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. That one's adopted. You know, we're talking about sort of amnesty, really, for those durable medical folks on your bill last night, and we've got a couple, Animal Shelter and Farm America, same kind of thing, some amnesty for some folks who...
Madam Chair...
Talk about those?
Not knowing a lot of the difference between amnesty for Farm America and sales tax forgiveness for durable medical goods, I will explain that I think the Senate did find some resolution for Farm America, and we, in the supplemental budget bill, had a grant to them to pay their sales tax. And
all of it?
It's $12,000. And they had a request in for some funding to upgrade their buildings or something, and we said, look, we'll give you a grant, but you use it to pay your sales tax and then start collecting, or else get a legislator to carry a bill to give you some exemption. But that's what the resolution. So I don't think the tax committee needs to deal with this provision. I think it's been...
Well, if it doesn't make it through, it is representative... Gunther.
It wasn't Petersburg.
Petersburg, yes. Petersburg. And, you know, that one just wore me down. It's really frustrating.
It's good to know that you can be worn down. I have.
Well, it's easier to get worn down for a really low price tag.
Sure, Senator Scoy shouldn't bank on it.
Takes a long time.
Well, I mean, why don't we take a look at that and find out what the finance folks are doing?
Madam Chair,
sounds like it's a better deal for them.
Madam Chair, for those that have been around, Dr. Hagerty, the former state veterinarian, is involved in this. I ran into him at a agriculture event, and he asked about it. I said, go check it out, and he hasn't contacted me back, so I think they're comfortable with what we're doing.
Chair.
Representative Davids, please.
To Senator Skoy, is it still in the omnibus finance bill, or has it been knocked out, or is it moving forward? Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll check into that. Okay. We don't want to abandon our members' provision.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So moving on that one. That one was just, that was that one. Animal shelter right above it on that one, that was Representative Gunther's, and that was also an amnesty, and this was, you know, puppies and kitties. If you can go for Farm America.
Now, there's another issue with this.
Go for puppies and kitties. So is it Ms. Dalton who should tell us the House provision? Let's ask Ms. Dalton to just tell us what we have here. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, essentially what this does is it provides an amnesty for any nonprofit animal shelter who currently does not have a sales tax registration number, provided that they register within 4 months of the passage of this bill. Basically, what it's turned out is that a number of these animal shelters did not realize that they should be charging sales tax on pets when they were, you know, on their adoption fees, that those were actually taxable sales. And so they never collected the tax, and they had never registered to collect the tax. And now when they're registering, they're finding out that they owe significant amounts of back taxes.
So you didn't charge it, but if you go now start within 4 months, you pay it going forward?
Right. Basically, this is you didn't know what you should have done. Go forth and sin no more, but we won't penalize you for past behavior.
And, Madam Chair, I wonder if we shouldn't ask the department if they have some information on this. My memory is kind of skipping around.
Oh, okay, great.
On this,
yes, please, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members, well, thank you. We've been very concerned about this. I think one of the things that we've really tried to work really hard is to get we have a voluntary enforcement program now in place where we contact these shelters and help them understand their reporting and tax requirements. And so we've been engaging in that a lot. I would suggest that we continue to work on this voluntary program throughout this next year and try to contact as many of these folks as we can. I mean, one of the things is some of them obviously are learned about this after the fact, and I think what we try to do is meet with them, explain their obligations, explain how they can go about doing that. We have some flexibility in determining what past liability may or may not be owing with respect to some of these organizations. So I think what we would like to do is to continue to work with them to try to get them to voluntarily comply and to go forward and sin no more, so to speak, and make sure they understand their obligations.
You oppose the House provision?
Yes, we do, Madam Chair.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Scott.
Well, Commissioner, do you see resolution in sight? Because we just assume not, you know, be working on this for a number of years. So how is it going, and do you see an end in sight with it?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, we have made progress with a number of these organizations, and I think one of the outreach programs we're going to engage in is reaching out to the organizations that they belong to and actually go out into greater Minnesota and many places and find these organizations. But we are making progress with a number of them. In fact, some of the folks who have, I think, been concerned and the focus of some of this legislation we've been working with, I think we can make a lot of progress between now and next year.
Maybe could someone from your staff, I don't know that we'll give up on this yet, but could you, someone with your staff meet with Representative Gunther? To apprise him of where these things are at. He's the author of this bill. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Commissioner Franz, you said that you're working on this. As you work on it and you meet with someone, are you going for back taxes? And if so, how far back? Or are you going from this point forward?
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, it really is a case-by-case basis. I mean, one of the things we find in many cases, if we contact people early on, there's really not much of a history at all, and so those are easier cases to resolve. So we're not looking to try to kick up a lot of old past liability. Our goal is to get folks who are starting to get them to sign up and start collecting right away. So that's really a case-by-case basis, and I think that we, in the spirit of what this committee is trying to accomplish, I think we can help make that happen as well by the and I'd be happy to go talk with Representative Gunther personally, let him know what we're undertaking to try to make this not such an issue going forward.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's wise counsel that you've given the Department of Revenue, but I'm still a little nervous about just letting this one go. I think this would just clean it up for us, clear it up, and, you know, it's for the puppies and the kittens, Madam Chair.
Yes, it is.
Madam Chair.
We're for the puppies and the kittens. Top that.
We're for the kids.
Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Just a little side note on this. Representative Gunther carries this bill. It's for a community in Representative Cornish's district, which happens to be my hometown.
Lots of connections.
It's a 3-4.
Sorry, Commissioner.
And I'm also familiar with another case like this that occurred in New Ulm. And they did reach a conclusion, but these are volunteer organizations. These folks aren't tax experts. They want to do the right thing, but they don't really have resources to pay these back taxes because they don't have a lot of money laying around. So I'm pleading for the puppies, Madam Chair.
You know, it's hard to listen to my argument come back to me.
We'll just hold on that a little bit, and we'll see what Representative Gunther thinks about what the commissioner's folks tell that.
That sounds good.
Okay. Let's see. We have a donated construction materials for library. Representative Swazinski, did you hear this bill?
Madam Chair, we did. And, Madam Chair, the reason we did not include this is we're not exactly comfortable that the precedent is good, and we have had donated buildings in the past that did not receive this sales tax exemption. And I'm pretty sure that when I bring it up, you're going to remember it, because it was Senator Bach was chairing the conference committee, and you were on the other side of the table, and we were trying to receive a sales tax exemption for a Thief River Falls.
Yes.
I thought you would remember it.
You know, there's something going on up there now.
You know, we actually went to Senator Stump to ask if he was interested in revisiting the Thief River Falls provision.
Well, wasn't that on the front page or of the one of the sections of the Star Tribune recently? No, that was Fergus, I think.
Yeah, I don't think
that was the Fergus project. Okay. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And the Swazinski provision, I just want to make sure that I understand it. It's someone is donating materials for a library in Marshall, I believe, and they may have to pay sales tax, and this would exempt them from sales tax. Is that correct?
And Ms. Dalton, can you remind? And it was a pretty generous situation here. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, actually the person who's donating it is actually donating the entire the labor as well as the materials. They are essentially building the extension for the library and giving it free and clear to the city. But, you know, there's no, obviously there's no sales tax on the labor, but there is sales, there's use tax on the construction materials that they would owe. And so that's what they're asking for forgiveness for.
Well, Madam Chair, to that point, I think, yes, it would set a precedent. I would happen to think a very good precedent that if we have somebody that's that generous that would do that, why in the world would we charge them a use tax? I mean, if we can get a library donated, we're just being asked at the state level to waive the use tax. I say let's go. Let's make it the law of the land.
Thanks, bye.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, you know, I made that argument for, I think, 3 years in a row. And the cost on the Thief River Falls sales tax was $364,000. So it was a significant donation of a public building. And they paid sales tax on that. And so we didn't include this on the bill.
And, Madam Chair, I'd be willing to go back to 2009. Just kidding.
Okay, we'll hold on that one. But, you know, really, it really, Representative Swazinski has a really, I don't even know who it is, person who did this. I mean, that, how this turns out should be.
Well, and Madam Chair, you know, I'm just curious. I don't know the answer to this, but what if they would have donated the money to the city and the city built the library, would they not have qualified for the sales tax exemption that we have in place?
No. Ms. Dalton's saying no. Ms. Dalton, they would not qualify in that situation in current law, right?
Madam Chair, they probably wouldn't. It would depend on how the contract was structured. If it was a lump sum contract, the city would have to pay the sales tax. If it was done as a materials contract and then a separate labor contract, the materials would have been exempt from sales tax.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney, nice to see you back.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be back.
We skipped over some things because you weren't here.
Yeah, I apologize for any inconvenience. What if they donated the materials to the Friends of the Library?
Same thing.
What if the Hennepin County sales tax built the library stadium, too? Oh, yeah. Just kidding.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Slocum.
This is a perfect example of no good deed goes unpunished.
Yes.
That's absolutely right.
So sad.
Well, let's just set it aside for further discussion.
Okay. So let's jump back up then, because we're holding on that, to we did estate and gift, but then we didn't do micro distillery tax credit because that's Representative Dabney's bill.
Madam Chair.
So here he is, Senator Gazalka.
Do you want me to review my domicile to Representative Dabney?
I don't think. No.
No need. Give me one of the
bricks. Yes. Yes. In the recess, we'll do that. Representative Dabney, you want to tell us about you want to tell the Senate about the micro distillery tax credit?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I'm sure the Senate is aware, we've had a dramatic increase in the craft brewery. Industry? There's the word I'm looking for. Over the last few years, and it's been very exciting. An area where Minnesota has lagged and is just at the beginning is micro distilleries. These folks are doing vodka, gin, whiskey, things like that. And they're simply asking for parallel treatment to some of the tax benefits we give to the small brewers to help this industry get off the ground. There's, I believe, 7 of these functioning across the state now. There's a handful or two more that are using Minnesota-grown raw materials and developing their own unique recipes, and it's an opportunity to support an emerging industry that looks, if you look at other states, is about to pop and really explode.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, can you tell me, I think brewers have this comparable provision. Do wineries have the comparable provision? Do you know?
Senator Skoy, my understanding is that they do not. I'm looking for a friend who might be able to confirm that. But I believe that the wineries do not. Mr. Michael, if he may, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, Minnesota farm wineries they're allowed under the alcohol law to sell their product, but they do pay tax on it. Last year when the House was considering its alcohol tax increase, you proposed as part of it, and I think it was in the House tax bill, to give them a comparable exemption, but when the tax increase went away, that comparable exemption went away. So they are paying tax.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Michael, if I remember correctly, the micro distilleries are not allowed to sell directly. They have to, I cannot go into my local micro distillery. I actually have one, and buy a bottle of vodka. I have to go to the liquor store and purchase it there. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, that is my understanding of the liquor control law as well. They're required to sell through a wholesaler so that you get the 3-tiered. Manufacturer, wholesaler, retailer.
Field trip.
Do they make gin?
Questions? Senator S., please.
I have a question of the department. We do have a
We do have the A59 amendment, and I'm looking at the language that's in the House bill, and I see the, you know, the licensing is under the same statute, 348-101. Doesn't refer to subdivision 17A, but I assume that's okay. But can you tell me why this amendment, in order to accomplish Representative Dabney's purpose, is superior to the language that's in the bill?
It's an addition.
Who are you asking, Ms. Pollack?
I'm asking the department.
Whose amendment is this?
Yeah.
It's the department's amendment. Okay, we'd like to hear. Star.
I don't know whose amendment it is.
I thought it was Representative Dabney's, but turns out it's the department's. Ms. Star.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, members, this language is simply an addition to the language that's in the bill. So micro distilleries are not wholesalers, but this credit is about the tax otherwise paid by wholesalers. Yes, Mr. Michael? Okay. And this is making it clear that the credit being provided here is the credit that would be imposed when the manufacturer said standing in the shoes of a wholesaler giving out these samples. How'd I do?
Is there anything else to add, sure, Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, no. I essentially under the alcohol excise tax, wholesalers are the taxpayers, and so the department requested this to just make it clear that when these micro distilleries are authorized to hand out their samples, they're going to be essentially filing taxes like a wholesaler. So this clarifies how they're going to do it, essentially. You did not have this with the beer provision because the beer tax is generally paid at, except for imports, is paid at the manufacturer level, and so you didn't have that ambiguity, and that's why the department has suggested adding this language.
So does Ms. Templin or Ms. McQuay know if this amendment costs anything? I assume it does not.
Madam Chair, this clarifies current law.
Okay. Clarifying language doesn't cost anything. Senator Skoyn.
Madam Chair, there is a little complication in that there is a liquor bill, the omnibus liquor bill, that's
moving through
the House and the Senate. And if that bill becomes law, it will have a cost ramification for this provision.
Yeah, well, we're on the amendment right now.
Yeah, no.
They want to put this on. So I think we can put this on, but yes, we're aware of that, and we understand it may be scored as negligible. No one knows that yet. So I don't think we need to adopt the micro distillery tax credit tonight.
Let's adopt the amendment. I move the amendment.
Okay, so Senator Rest moves the A59. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The A59 is adopted. So I think we all understand that one, and that point is yes. I think we think that and Representative Dabney is aware of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
We think it'll be small, but it'd be nice. I don't know that we'll get it, though, until we're long gone. Will we, Ms. Templin?
Madam Chair, if the liquor omnibus bill does pass within the next week, it is possible. I get the sense from the Department of Revenue that this is an estimate that they can turn around fairly quickly.
Ms. McQuay, you agree with that?
Madam Chair, members, I do agree with Ms. Templin.
Okay.
Madam Chair, the omnibus liquor bill is in the Senate Tax Committee. We're going to hear it on Monday. So
this liquor bill is in the Senate Tax Committee.
There was some
what's
excise,
going on there?
There was some excise tax. They are giving some excise tax forgiveness to wineries that buy their juice or their winemaking from
the area. You're going to strip it out and deal with it
we're going to take a look at it.
You know, we just took tax provisions out of medical marijuana.
Did you?
Everybody on the tax committees in the House and Senate, it is your duty to hunt these provisions down and take them away from finance chairs who think they get to decide tax policy.
Madam Chair.
Strip it out. Senator Gazalka.
If we end up going down this road, we'll have done the micro distilleries and a beer tax credit and not a wine tax credit. I'm just wondering, is that in either one of the liquor bills, or is that anywhere, or no?
I think not. I think the difference, though, is that Mr. Michael and Representative Dabney were going through as wineries sell wine directly. Micro distilleries cannot.
And Madam Chair, I guess the growlers, maybe they can do it 6 days a week.
Right now.
6 days.
Yeah, 6 days a week.
Okay, so hold on that, right? We're just trying to go back to ones before Representative Dabney was gone. Oh, do you want to talk more about the milling for distillery, or can we do the Carlton County soil and water? Did you have more on micro distillery?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Carlton County soil and water conservation. Representative Dabney.
Pardon me, Madam Chair. These are some of the nicest and hardest working people you're ever going to meet, Senator Skoy. Carlton County soil
and water.
Oh, you've met with them many times. Excellent. So you know what I'm talking about. The Carlton County Soil and Water Conservation District, that is coterminous with the Carlton County, needs a new building. And they need a building that's large enough and on a parcel that's large enough to handle some of the equipment that they have for the work that they carry out. They've reached an agreement, as I understand it, with a couple of other entities in Carlton County, and I forget who off the top of my head, to co-share the building with, and they've been working with the USDA, which is headquartered in Chicago, and they are willing to work with the Carlton County Soil and Water Conservation District to do the loan to allow for the construction of the building. It's outside of town, but obviously within the county. But the FDA requires, or the U.S. Agriculture Department, excuse me, requires that the entity that receives the loan is the entity that has the taxing capacity, because they want that assurance that their loan is going to get paid off through the taxes that are levied. And so they have come to us. Representative Sundin has worked very hard with them on this to find a way to get them to be able to get the tax that they need. We were not crazy about having the Soil and Water Conservation District do it directly. We thought that was a precedent that we did not want to cross, but we do in the House tax bill allow the county to levy the tax and see if that could work with the federal folks.
Go ahead.
And Madam Chair, why would the county not be able to levy for this building currently without any legislation at all?
Madam Chair, the challenge for the county is, as I understand it, they are under a court order to build a new courthouse. And I don't know the history on that, but apparently there's problems. And so the courts have ordered the construction of a new courthouse. I don't know if it's a jail problem. I don't know if it's a court capacity, you know, we need more courtroom sort of thing. But there's something up with the Carlton County Courthouse that it has fallen below whatever standards the courts deem necessary. And so they have ordered Carlton County to build a new courthouse and to levy their property taxpayers to fund that. And so the county's needing a nudge to add in the Soil and Water Conservation District building.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, wouldn't the county board still be required to? I've just had a chance to look at the language here. I mean, they would still have to make a vote and have a levy and.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I don't. We're trying to represent that the folks who are very nice to meet with pleased about this. They would like their bill as introduced. Mm-hmm. And the House is unwilling to do that. Speaking about it with us before. So, I mean, I think we're trying to find a way to help Representative Sundin and these folks kind of get what they want and need. But I think we're having a difficult time, and maybe you are too, expressing. I think it's very bipartisan to create levy authority soil and water conservation. So that's not in here. Representative David's asked me twice, that's not in here, right? And so, you know, they're very passionate, but so that's not in here. But I think as Representative Dabney is saying, you know.
So what is the benefit that's in this language that they currently don't have?
Well,
Madam Chair, I guess it would be a nod from us to the county that, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing if they did this.
Can Mr. Hines weigh in here, please? Pat Dalton. Is pointing at Pat Dalton, who's pointing at Steve Hines. That's how that works.
So,
Mr. Hines,
so really,
you can see. So speaking close to the mic there.
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, there is one distinction that the provision does allow that this levy would be shown separately on the statement on lines 24, 5, and 6 from the county levy. So in some ways it does give the county a little bit more authority to levy without it sort of being considered as part of their levy. That's a distinction.
Well, you can just think about it. It's sort of like the Jackson abatement. I mean, if people locally want to make these decisions,
well, Madam
we can
Chair,
come back.
Madam Chair, the analogy that I was just thinking of was the county that wants to keep their public safety levy on their own line, NOCA County. Is that not what they're doing here? The county board is passing a levy. You're just giving them the ability to put it on the property tax statement on its own line?
Yes.
Is that what's going on?
Representative Runbeck's bill? That
is Representative Runbeck's bill.
Yeah.
Is that what's going on? Yes, I think
so. Somewhat.
I don't know. I mean, I used to be a locally elected official. A bunch of us were out here. Sometimes people feel like when you're on the city council and it says, here's your property taxes, you get some cover when you say, well, but, you know, that's the school, so go call them. That's the county, go call them. I'm the city. You know, maybe it's sort of, but that's for this. I don't know.
Yeah. Madam Chair, maybe I'll just talk to Mr. Sylvia during one of the breaks.
Okay.
And then we'll come back to this.
Yeah,
but
sure.
If that's what's going on, I can't think that's
just
a problem.
Question.
Senator Russ, please.
I understand that it's discretionary for the county. They don't have to do it in Subdivision 2. But then if they do it, we put their limits and constraints on how they have to spend that levy.
Is that right? Yes. Yes. That's how you want. Yes.
And because otherwise they could put a levy on, a separate line and then spend it any way they want.
Right.
So by Subdivision 3, if they take that I'm just trying to understand, if they take that discretionary action, then they're constrained on what they must spend the levy on. Is that what your intent was, Representative Dabney?
Okay, so we only have, if we can do Dakota, did you want to wait on the Dakota and Ramsey, even though Representative David?
Let's talk about it.
Okay, because we can come back and do it with housing. Nope. Otherwise, we could just take a recess right now.
Now let's do these two first.
Okay, so Dakota County Development Agency, Representative Dabney, this was Representative Hansen's bill. Representative Dabney. Was there a Senate bill on this?
Dakota County.
Yes.
Yes,
Senator
Metzen.
Metzen, yes. Okay, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is about the distribution of affordable housing in the metro area, and they've, if I'm on the right provision, I just want to make sure that I am here. Yes. Their HRA would be allowed by resolution to exercise housing improvement area powers, and that would allow them to do a little bit more in the affordable housing area, as I understand it. And develop some more housing, and Representative Hansen is interested in that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I'm reading the language of the bill of where the tax credit allocation threshold criteria are, and it's in an area within 1/2 mile of a completed or planned light rail transit way, bus rapid transit way, or commuter rail station, within 1/4 mile of any spot along a high-frequency local bus line. It says any spot. An area within 1/2 mile from a bus stop, etc. So we're talking about these transit ways, and we're going to try to put some more low-income housing next to those? Is that what's driving that?
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, yes. And I think there's a couple of dynamics at
at play there. One, a recognition that some of these some of the families that might qualify for low-income housing might not have automobiles, and so placing these in proximity to bus lines and that sort of thing makes it possible for them to live there and get to work or whatever. Additionally, there's challenges. We see that in St. Paul with the opening of whatever they're call whatever color they've established
green.
For the Central Corridor, Green Line, that land values go up and can make it more difficult for lower-income people to live along these lines. And so by allowing Dakota County to use this provision, you allow for more mixed-income development in some high transportation areas.
And, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, so you're recognizing that the development is going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the development that you're choosing, so you're trying to direct the development.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I kind of see this a little differently. Just think about it here. The light rail, this would not be by light rail. I know the language says that, but there is no light rail in Dakota County.
Of course not.
Busways. Hiawatha Line goes from Bloomington to Minneapolis. It's fully contained in Hennepin, and the Green Line is going to be Hennepin and Ramsey. This is in Dakota, so it's not light rail. There is no light rail, and in fact, if Southwest Light Rail ever gets built, that won't be in Dakota County either. That'll be in Hennepin. And
is it Red Rock?
No, I think what it's really about is, as you read on it, it's bus stops, bus rapid transit, HOTV lane. So it's people getting on buses mostly. Just so you think about it.
I didn't understand.
But so that issue, the issue for me here on this one, and I think people can be of two minds on this, but it's just something to think about, is the way it's been expressed to me over time is that, you know, there's a certain amount of low income housing. I don't know what they call it. Say chits.
Credits,
and they get sort of gobbled up because there's some people in parts of the state are doing this. That's kind of what they do for a living, and they're good at it, and they're moving them into certain parts. Yet the surrounding suburbs, who are willing to develop this stuff, and in fact, often people say the suburbs are trying to keep low income housing out, and they're actually suburbs who are trying to do it. But they can't access these credits because they get used up by Minneapolis and St. Paul every year. So Dakota County is trying to come in and say, we would take some of that low-income housing, but we can't get these credits. So there's a trade-off here depending on how you feel about where this should be located. And I think the language on close to transit gives comfort for those who would say, well, what do you want to move people out to the suburbs for? They're not going to be able to get to work. And that's how I hear the concept. But I think there are people who, you know, are good at developing this low-income housing in the core urban core cities, and I don't know that they feel they want to give up some credits to have it go out into the suburbs. And I know Lakeville is an example of a community that's been more than willing and can get them. So this would allow Dakota County to get some of them. Take a shot at it.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment. On line 6711. Delete spot and insert stop.
Is that what it says?
Spot.
All those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. There's no longer a spot.
See, well, it said
adopted.
A 1/4 mile from any spot along a high frequency local bus line. I think you mean stop.
Yes, I think
okay.
So. Thank you. Senator Dezik.
Madam Chair, and I believe you are right on the housing credits, and I think actually there are you get bonus points if there is access to transit.
Mm-hmm.
It helps developers, and it helps get access to those credits. And when they do the checklist, if you have access to transit.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Dietzick, what do you think of this provision?
Put you on the spot.
Put
there.
You on the spot.
She just went, what?
Want to keep my mouth shut. I think Chair Lencheski had it right. I think there are communities in the suburbs that have wanted to do low-income housing and have offered to do low-income housing and have applied, and they have run into these problems where they don't get the checklist. They don't get as many points when they add up the points because they do not necessarily have access to transit. And then there are others who have, run the industry and they know how to do it and they know where the opportunities are and how to make it work for the urban core. So it's, if you like to, I think there's opportunities for growth in the entire metro, and I think it helps balance the metro out from a lot of perspectives. And so,
do you have a motion?
I move that we adopt the House language as amended.
As amended, I love it. So, okay, thank you. Further discussion, Commissioner? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. That's adopted. Thank you, Senator Dietzick. Pass that on to Representative Hansen. And the only other one before we take a recess is the Ramsey County HRA. Senator, Representative Dabney.
It's just being able to establish one, I believe, Madam Chair.
It's the same the authority
powers of an
we
HRA for Ramsey County.
Last year, we're
just
now
like
getting
others
Ramsey.
Do. Is it anything more than that?
Mr. Hines, is there something else about the Ramsey County HRA provision in the House bill that we should know other than what Senator Ress just said? Mr. Michael, sorry.
Madam Chair, I could not hear what Senator Ress said, so.
I thought it was on just allowing them. It's the first section of Article 6. It's being able to establish an HRA. I mean, like others do.
I was
right?
Long provision and
so that it can that the HRA can do housing improvement district powers, have those like others. I mean, it's not, and like Dakota County did last year. It's just giving the same HRA powers to Ramsey County that a Dakota County had that we gave last year. I don't know if that's extraordinary. I have no idea whether that's extraordinary. Somebody would have to tell me. Or if this is kind of a boilerplate authority to exercise those powers.
Representative Isaacson, maybe?
Isaacson?
Yeah.
And Senator Scalzi is the Senate author.
Oh. Yeah.
That's what I have.
Another
Representative, Mr. Michael, is... Does anyone know who's the House author? Is it Isaacson?
It's Isaacson.
Madam Chair, yes, it is Representative Isaacson. And this, essentially what this provision does is to give the Ramsey County HRA the authority to exercise housing improvement areas, which cities normally do. And they were suggesting that they could do it for multiple areas of Ramsey County. This is, of course, the provision that allows for... Typically, it would be townhouse developments that have gone into somewhat had deferred maintenance, and so they need to make significant private improvements like replacing roofs and sidewalks and so forth.
And
this allows the HRA to help them by essentially having special assessment style financing.
I think it's all coming back to all of us. Senator Dietzick.
I believe Hennepin County has something similar to this, too. So,
and, Madam Chair, as I'm hearing this again, it's primarily a financing strategy for these townhouse developments and the like, and it just makes it easier for them to deal with the deferred expensive pieces of deferred maintenance.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, that's correct. And essentially, because this... The government program allows the liens to have priority, so it provides for less expensive financing than they would obtain in the private market. That's essentially the essence of it.
So, do you want to hold on that? And
no. What's the matter with it?
Nothing. All coming back to me. I do remember this.
Trying to think of if there's any controversy.
Right.
Who would be opposed to this? Can you of allowing them these powers?
I remember working on these.
Yeah, that's. Would a city be opposed to giving them these powers if they felt that the county HRA was over, you know, being able to do things in a city that the city did not want?
Madam Chair, I have a question because my
Deedzek, please.
Thank you. My understanding, and again, I'm going back a few years here. My understanding is, at least in Hennepin County, we could not, if the city had their own EDA or HRA, the county couldn't come in and do anything without
exactly
permission
right.
from the city.
Exactly
so,
right.
I would ask staff, is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, actually, if Senator Ress, thank you. If you look at 66.27 to 66.30, there's stipulations how the city can exercise
exactly.
a veto.
This is exactly what we did.
Yes. And that was why the Hennepin County HRA yes. thing was allowed to go through, because the cities insisted on their being able to, in a sense, have kind of municipal consent to allow the county to come in and do this kind of activity. And if they opposed it, it wouldn't happen, particularly if they had their own their own authority.
I think that's,
they don't
yes.
seem to be paying attention, so I guess
no.
it's okay.
Well, this is funny listening to it because, honestly, I have a memory of Senator Rest working on this same thing.
For Hennepin County.
Yes, and I think Representative Mullery was involved, and maybe I just remember this from before.
Anyway, so she's going to move it.
Madam Chair, I move the
House Article 6,
thank
Section
you.
1.
House Article 6, Section 1, regarding the Ramsey County HRA.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All say nay. That's been adopted. Thank you, Senator Deedzek. Should we take a recess?
Yes.
Work on a few of those things we talked about. And what do we think they are?
State and gift tax changes. We would talk. The issue there is domicile as to whether we're going to do that or not. I want to talk to Mr. Sylvia about the Carlton County Stormwater Conservation District.
Yes.
And we
what was the issue with the firefighter retirement?
I think you just want to check on something. And I don't remember what it is, but let's get that one done if we can when we come back.
Which firefighter one
firefighter
is
firefighter retirement supplement include independent nonprofit.
Oh, no.
Where is that?
Pension.
Oh.
That was an independent firefighter group. We were just
that
going
we
to get
overlooked
information
them.
On
yep.
how many people it was.
And then the typhoon one, we have not adopted that yet.
We can do that.
And the straightening out the that we have the correct understanding of the implications of the TOD, the House versus Senate language with regard to the
right.
liens
yep.
on cars.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Maybe staff might have to draft something on that.
Well,
together.
I would ask Mr. Michael to work with Ms. McQuay and
okay.
On that, because she's been the one that's because it was a fiscal issue. So
okay.
maybe both Ms. Pollock and Ms. McQuay. I want to make sure that whatever we do doesn't cost anything. It's not necessary as far
right.
as I'm concerned. Our language doesn't cost anything, even if it has some issues for quote, innocent buyers. So
yep.
So I'm not satisfied with the House language, I guess
yep.
is what I'm saying.
Oh, I hear that. What else? Oh, I have an item. But go ahead, Senator Skoy. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, with regard to the firefighter retirement, the Senate has passed off the Senate floor the identical language that the House has in a different bill. It's in the pension bill. Pension bill, Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair, members, that's correct.
So
the only difference would be
it's the pension bill. Who knows what will happen there?
Yeah, no, I think we should.
And this came from the Tax Committee.
Yeah. So, Madam Chair, I'll move House Article 1, Section 4 and 13.
As amended.
As amended.
As amended.
Did we amend it?
Yes, it was that the four Mr. Cummings spoke on the mic. The 356 when it was supposed to be 353. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That's all those opposed, nay. You know, so we've given direction that we do want this unsession article work. Yes. We can't get that done tonight, but
tomorrow.
Just, you know that that's underway. I'm just trying to think before we recess, anything else we should be working on? And I do want to go back to, can we just potentially come back? I do want to have the Rangers look at your amendment, but I still don't know why we wouldn't, unless it changes the Senate Minerals article a lot. Oh, it does. Okay, then let's not. I was going to say we should just adopt that and get that out of the way, too.
Madam Chair, it's one amendment's 2.5 pages, and one is 1.5 pages. I think it's pretty extensive, and we should have that reviewed by the legislators that are involved in it.
They can tell us what they want. Okay, then, Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, on the firefighter retirement, there actually are two sections listed on that, and I believe you just adopted one of those sections, and another staff person can better speak to what the second section does, but you may want to also consider that.
I think Senator Skoy said section 4 and 13. Did people agree or not hear that? So does that cover both then? Right.
Yes. Madam Chair, that's correct. I only heard section 4.
Okay, so for the record, we all heard 4 and 13. So if anyone ever goes back and looks at the tape, Senator Skoy moved both of them, and we voted for them. Okay?
Done.
Good. Can I ask the Senate staff, is there something that your staff sees that we could work on in the break?
Ms. Pollack, others, anything that we're missing?
And you know, your old list. There was something on your old list, and I would like to adopt anything on your old list that we, because when you worked through a list, there were some that maybe, and they don't come to mind, but I got a note from Representative, your House member, Representative Erickson, printed out an email I sent him on my iPhone to remind me that I told him that I would do something that because I knew Senator Skoy would just do it, and I would like to adopt that and get it out of the way. And maybe Mr. Michael can tell me what it is again.
Madam Chair, it's the personal property exemption for the utility project.
So do you not, Senator Skoy, you want that?
It's my permission.
So we should come back and move that, too. We should get the right citation and move that, too. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Anything else that anyone comes to mind looking at the Senate's list that's easy, we could adopt it tonight?
Madam Chair, I think when we're in the recess, we should everybody kind of look through this list. And if there's something that comes to mind, let's talk about it the next time we're back. Half an hour, 45 minutes, I suppose.
Okay, so we're going to go. We'll take one. Say.
Of course.
We'll recess for 30 minutes. We're in recess. Thank you.
What?
So we're going to come back to order, and if it's okay, I'll just go with the things I have, and then, And I think we've solicited from nonpartisan staff on both sides of the department any more things they can think of. And so, you know, maybe we could just start with, did we finish the firefighter retirement supplemental? Yes. That one's done, right?
Yes.
Pension issue. That one's done.
We adopted
it. Yes. Okay, so the Typhoon. Are you guys ready on that one?
We're ready.
So, Representative Davids, you're on the Typhoon motion.
Yes, I will move.
Into the mic.
Okay, here we go. Madam Chair, I'll move House Article 4, Sections 5, 6, 8, and 14. And for the record, that has to do with the Typhoon in the Philippines, the tax deduction for a two-week period that in 14, it goes back to 2013, Madam Chair.
Okay, discussion. All those in favor say it.
Madam Chair, we support.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted. Senator Skoy, our staff thinks the sliding scale things you guys talked about yesterday are fine. The notification, we never adopted them.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, is there
they
a
don't
chance,
cost anything.
Would you be willing to consider the exclusion as part of that? That's
We have to think about
exclusion.
That more. That's the...
No, you're not. That's the one where there's six or seven facilities that got this personal property tax exclusion. We really think that it wasn't intended to be going to a statewide deal. It's a big impact on those host communities, and that we'd like to not have that going any further.
I have to think about that one because I'm a little confused about that one, honestly.
I think we should maybe confer with Excel.
Okay.
So if we can hold on that. But I think there are, I'm going to ask Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael. I thought there were two other provisions related to notification that we didn't adopt. Is it one provision or two? Can someone tell us? Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, there are two different provisions in the second one is in both bills. It's House Article 1, Sections 2, 4, and 5.
Right.
And Senate Article 2, Sections 2, 4, and 5. Page 4 of the side-by-side.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I think we had an amendment that turned this into a website.
As amended by the A62?
Turned it into a website with a listserv for people who are interested in it.
Okay. Everyone remember that. That's Senate Article 2.
Everything okay.
Article 1, Sections 2, 4, and 5, amended by the A62. Is that correct?
That's what it is.
Okay, so that's Senator Scoy's motion. All those in favor say aye. 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 Opposed say nay. Adopted. Okay, and then we have Roger Erickson's Beltrami provision, Senator Scoy, which is actually you, and I have where it is, so maybe someone can tell us about the Roger Erickson Beltrami.
Article 1, Section 3, page Senate. 3 of the Senate.
You probably don't want to move that yourself, so
I'll move it.
So Senator Ress moves. Again, I'm sorry.
Senate Article 1, Section 3.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. That motion's adopted. And then we have
Article
I'm working on three lists, so I apologize. What about, what did we decide on this? Did you guys have a chance to think about if you wanted to do the Carlton County Soil and Water?
We do.
Your
language.
Okay. So Senator Ress moves House Article 7, Section 10. Do you have that? Is that correct? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. This.
Madam Chair,
Senator Scott.
While we're in that part of your list, I think we would be willing to take the sames on the estate and gift tax. We will hold on the domicile provision as long as you know that we're going to come back and revisit that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Senator Scott. And do we want the staff to tell us that motion, or is it?
Maybe the staff should tell us the motion. Probably
on
House
yours?
Article 4, Section 3, 6, 18.
Except those are the wrong references.
These are wrong letters.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is right, though. It's,
no.
Yeah,
those
Article
are the wrong
four,
sections,
three, four,
Trami,
five.
No. Okay, so
let's get it right.
Three, four.
Miss Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, it would be House Article 4, Section 3, 4, 15, 16, and 17.
State and give
tax. And the Section 15 was as amended by the A58.
Correct.
Section 15?
Which amended section?
Section 15.
15 by the A58.
Everyone have that?
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Those provisions are adopted. I have... What did you guys think about the exempt coin operated and it was amended by the A53? Did you want to do that? It does cost money.
That's not very much.
Do you want to do that? It's in both bills.
Perfect.
So.
I would move.
Okay. Senator Ress? Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Different issue.
I would move.
Senator Ress moves.
It'd be House Article 3, Section 9, as amended by the A53.
House Article 3, Section 9, as amended by the A53, is Senator Ress's motion.
Discussion.
Say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's adopted. How about production property bins, definition bins and tanks?
And Madam Chair, we're happy to adopt the definitions for the bins and tanks, and I would like to think that perhaps we could consider your transition aid at the same time. We've done some research on that. It looks like a pretty significant impact on those communities, and that we weren't aware of the impact, and so I think we would take the House language with regard to the transition aid also. Oh, they can't hear. So the Senate would be considering the House position with regard to transition aid for these folks, and if one of the staff could direct us to, Senator Rest couldn't direct us where
so
that goes.
House Article 2, Section 7, and House Article 1, Section 8 is what gives us the...
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, great. Does everyone have that? Okay. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those say nay. Those are adopted. We have Jackson abatement.
Yes.
So we wanted to do that. So Representative Davids, your motion. I guess I don't have the motion.
I will Senate Article 1.
Would you say that again?
Senate Article 1, Section 23, as amended yesterday by the A54 amendment. That's the Jackson abatement.
Okay. Everyone understand that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That motion, that is adopted. And I have a 4D amendment. I don't know. I saw Mr. Cummings talking to Senator Dziedzic. It's a technical item from the department. I don't know if Senator Dziedzic or Mr. Cummings or someone wants to tell us what it is. And Senator Dziedzic?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a technical amendment. We did talk about it earlier. It's regarding the Class 4D property and putting in the and keeping in that rate classification.
There was no confusion with those two
right.
tiers.
Yeah.
And I honestly really don't know anything about it. It's technical in nature,
yes.
And Senator Dziedzic.
Okay,
if she says it's okay, we're going with it. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Is there discussion?
Where does this go, though?
It's page 158.
Oh. Okay. Is it the House article or the Senate article? Where does this amendment go?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Mr. Sylvia, Mr. Madam Chair?
Mr. Sylvia, do you have an idea, or Mr. Hines, where the 4D could possibly go?
Madam Chair, members, it would be on page 44 of the side-by-side. It's Senate Article 8, Section 5. And, Madam Chair, we would adopt... If the committee were to adopt the A66, that would effectively replace Section 5, so it would be Section 5 as amended, which was a completely new section redone.
So, Senator Dziedzic, are you moving, just to be clear, page 44 on the side-by-side, Senate Article 8, Section 5, adopting the A66 amendment, which replaces Section 5 as amended? Did I get that right, Mr. Sylvia?
I believe, yeah.
Yes, Madam Chair.
That's it. So that's your motion, Senator Dziedzic, right? For the tape here, so we know what we did. Okay, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. We did Roger Erickson Beltrami.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, I have disabled vet. How do you guys feel about that one? The no cost that goes from the 5 years to the 8 we talked about yesterday.
It's a cost.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest. It's providing assistance to veterans, but is targeted at only disabled veterans and their decedents. Kind of a way of providing assistance, but targeting it very narrowly to those who've really given.
And Representative Dabney, just because my memory is not as good as it always has been, what we're doing is if the vet passes on, the spouse gets the property tax benefit now would be for 8 years instead of the current 5 years.
Madam Chair, Senator Sequoia, that's correct. Madam Chair, Ms. Schill would like to chip in.
Michelle, please.
Madam Chair and members, this is an item on the spreadsheet, line 160. There is a cost in the tails of savings of $310,000.
Savings.
Savings?
Yes, because it's an exclusion.
It's PTR.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, it's a savings because it shifts taxes off of homesteads to other pipes, so it
less
saves
PTR.
Us on PTR.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the less circuit breaker is paid out.
Everything that's been.
Senator Gazalka, what do you think?
Back.
Trees are okay with it.
Okay. Okay, so Senator Rest moves. Question.
House Article 2, Section 8.
They adopted Jackson?
Yes.
This little, one of our little cheat sheets is on there. House Article 2, Section 8.
We could do my exclusion with this exclusion. we'd be all for that.
So is that right? House Article 2, Section 8.
Maybe we got to tie those exclusions together.
Yes. Disabled.
We'll come back to my exclusion.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. That's adopted. I also have.
Disabled veterans.
I want to know the micro distillery tax credit. We know there would be a cost. I guess what I was thinking is that comes in, then the House would own that cost.
And, Madam Chair, we had a little discussion about this, and we might want to think about it if there might be an amendment that we would be offering on this. Yeah, so we want to think about it a little bit.
My memory is that was very expensive, and we were willing to do it because we had an alcohol tax. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Mr. Michael, do you remember what that winery credit costs?
That's just a little bit.
Okay, let's just hold on then. We'll just think about it. But we... Do you want to... No, do you want to know what it might have cost? Ms. Templin, do you have a memory? For some reason, I think it costs.
Madam Chair, if I heard you correctly, you're looking for the cost of the small brewers credit from 2013?
Oh, for the wineries.
Oh, the wineries. Is that a bill from Senator Metzen?
It was in the House tax bill in 2013. Yeah, okay. We're just curious, just kind of wondering. I also have Iron Range. We said no on the minerals article. We're stopping on that.
Well, Madam Chair, we did talk to Senate counsel. I think the question would be whether you're comfortable without having the House members having seen the amendments. The Senate's ready to move on it.
One was technical and one isn't.
One is technical, and I think there is one that has a little more policy. Why don't we ask Mr. Silva?
I think we'll have to check. But Mr. Silva?
They're going to have to.
Madam Chair, members, there are two amendments. One is purely technical. It was based on recommendation from the department on the administrability of a provision in Tax Bill 1 dealing with the Iron Range Fiscal Disparities Program. I talked to Mr. Hines about it a few minutes ago.
So, Mr. Hines or Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael, I guess I'm just trying to think. If the Senate minutes article plus the technical is adopted, there's no change. It's this other amendment. So we'd still be able to reconsider. I guess we'll just wait.
Let's just wait.
We'll wait.
We got days. We got multiple days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, multiple.
two.
I have on my list here Lufton. And I'm just trying to think of yesterday's stuff. Okay, so Senator Rest needs the motion for the Bluffton. Ms. Dalton is probably, it's only in the House bill, so she'll find it.
Bill. It's untraveled.
112.
112. It's past the floor.
The one section. 12.
They're looking.
I thought they were talking about that.
Madam Chair and members, it would be House Article 1, Section 12.
Senator Rest moves House Article 1, Section 12.
Madam Chair.
Is that Mr. Clay? Who's in it?
Yes.
Michelle?
It is also on the spreadsheet. A total of $20,000 in fiscal 15 and $28,000 in fiscal 16. It is line 122.
Okay, thank you. And that'll be the House's responsibility. So House Article 1, Section 12. You have a whole dollar. Discussion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted. And then, you know, can we just... We want to understand because we might not want to do it, but you have an EMS special taxing district that we don't have.
Yes,
That's just a little thing, isn't it? Is that a bad idea or a good idea?
Well, Madam Chair, it's South St. Paul, and they have a
St. Paul.
Yeah, they have an ambulance. It's a medicine proposal, and they're bumping up against the statutory limit for what they can levy for their ambulance district. So we made a slight increase. This has happened before. I think it's been about 6 years ago. The limit was $250,000. They had a $150,000 limit in it so that they could levy for their ambulance service, and now they're bumping up against that again. So we gave them the same increase they had 5 or 6 years ago. They're the only community that this impacts.
I don't think that's a big deal, but what do you all think?
It came relatively late, but...
We'll take that.
Okay. I would move that.
So, Senator Skoy. Oh, yes.
EMS.
We have it on...
Senate Article 1, Section 1.
So, Senator Skoy moves via Representative Davids. Senate Article 1, Section 1. Just wanting to make sure that's right.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Does everyone have that one? Discussion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted. We're cleaning up your list, too. We're just trying to move them along. What else? You have
one section.
Have another one, too.
Yeah, I have a couple.
Please, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a couple of provisions that have no cost that I don't think are going to be controversial that we haven't talked about yet. So do you want to talk about that?
Sure, we just did
bit?
EMS, yeah, and so we had never talked about that. You never know.
So there's the Greater Minnesota Internship Fix, and then Senator Kent has a transit parity. There's currently you get a break on some income tax break for transit passes.
Yes.
Or parking passes or something, and she wants to expand that to transit passes. So
does she use new money? Is this the...
It's negligible cost.
Mr. Michael, what's it called again? Transportation.
Madam Chair, it's the fringe benefit for employers that essentially allows a higher amount of wages to be paid pre-tax as transit benefits. Representative Kahn is a big supporter of this, I believe.
Representative Sarah Anderson, she usually, am I confusing, not this transit thing, the current law, what is the tax benefit for encouraging traffic demand or carpooling, or you know what I'm talking about, the corporate?
I don't know. This is essentially allows parity with the parking, pre-tax parking. That's where the parity comes from.
So that's completely
different.
Okay. Senator Dietzick.
So my note here says the exclusion is limited to $175 per month for parking and $100 per month for transit passes and transportation in a commuter vehicle. So I don't know. I don't know if that's it or not. Maybe not.
It's a negligible cost.
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is somewhat analogous to the discharge of indebtedness provision that's in both bills, in that it's sort of a preemptive federal conformity item. This is an item that the federal government has allowed periodically through the Internal Revenue Code, and it currently has expired. And it may be considered to be extended in legislation that's working its way through Congress. The provision in the Senate bill would provide this at the state level without regard to whether it's extended at the federal level.
Even if the feds don't do it, we would give the credit. Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, yes, Ms. Manzi's characterization is correct. And I believe the provision would, if the federal conformity provision were enacted, this provision would not effectively allow a double type of subtraction because it would be to the extent not subtracted from federal taxable income, or not included in federal taxable income.
So, Madam Chair, if the federal government passes this, then the federal the state credit kind of goes away. It's only if the federal government doesn't act. It's negligible.
Yeah, we did the Carleton County.
Shelby, Ms. McQuay, do you have a fiscal cost on this?
Madam Chair and members, the cost is negligible beginning in fiscal year 15.
Commissioner?
Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
How much is
the fiscal cost to us is
$17,000. Madam Chair?
Yes, please. You want to tell me what someone just told me?
There is a fiscal cost.
That was it.
You know I'm going to speak up if there's a fiscal cost. But I think one of the concerns is this sort of preemptive, as Ms. Manzi described, a preemptive conformity. Because if the federal government, if Congress does not extend this particular provision this year, which they are considering, as she mentioned, if they don't do it, then we've actually added some complexity next year because we now have our own new deduction in the state code. So it's not that it's not good policy in the sense that we conformed to it this last year, but as you know, there's a number of extenders now working their way through Congress, and we all know that may take a while. And we do understand it may not get resolved until later this year, but this would be pre-conforming, and if Congress does not extend it, then we would have a separate and different deduction, and we would have fiscal costs associated with that provision.
Mr. Chair, I mean, what I hear the commissioner saying isn't just that fiscal, it's that it adds complexity if they don't do it. Is it simple to add a sentence that it wouldn't be enacted if Congress doesn't act? You're saying you want it anyway.
Well, Madam Chair, I think the point is that if Congress doesn't act, these people would receive the credit. If Congress does act,
adding something to the
And they have a $17,000 cost. Well, let's visit. Come back and read. They hadn't talked about this before, so we can wait on it. Think about it overnight.
Is there another one you said?
Well, there's a Greater Minnesota Internship Fix, Article 3, Section 2, 3, and 4.
Does anyone know where that is on the side-by-side?
Page 18.
It allows the internship to be used by students who are not just undergraduates, but by students who are graduate students, and also it allows to be used in pursuit in a field that is not necessarily the field of the their major field. Like you could be an English major, but getting an internship in financial management or something. And so it's just expanding that a bit.
Ms. McQuay, is there a cost on that?
Madam Chair, there is no cost on the spreadsheet, and there is no cost attributed in the fiscal note, unless I'm missing it.
Madam Chair,
yes,
I would just add one more comment to the description of the provision. While the language would remove the requirement that the internship not be in the area of the major study, it must be eligible for academic credit.
Ms. Manzi, are you listening?
Yes.
Does this seem okay to you as far as workability and everything?
Madam Chair, to the best of my knowledge, yes. This is making some minor corrections to a provision that was enacted in last year's tax bill.
Is everybody okay? Sure. So the motion is?
Article 3, Senate, Sections 2, 3, and 4.
Senator Russ moves Article 3 of the Senate, Sections 2, 3, and 4. Is that it?
Yes, 2, yes. 3, and 4.
Okay. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted.
That's not a good answer.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to ask somebody, do we have the 855 amendment that we could pass out to my staff? Is that around? That's sure. We have an amendment we'd like to put on our military credit language.
Well, it's not the base. It's just you want to get it in the order you want.
Yeah, there's some question sure. about whether there would be allowed to get the credit twice. We want to make sure that doesn't happen. So it's just a language
sure.
fix we need. It's the A55 amendment on Article 3, Section 12 and 13.
Okay, sure.
And Madam Chair,
Ms. McQuay?
I would just add that this amendment conforms to the spreadsheet, the number the Senate is carrying.
Okay. So on the A55. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The A55 is adopted, and that's
thank
just
you,
to
Chair.
Get it in the order you want it. I know Representative Davids has a motion, but there's one. You want to talk about the pilot project as a grant for the firefighters as opposed to a tax credit? You know what? Less than a tenth of the price.
The pilot project. Well,
you know, maybe not tonight.
I think not tonight.
Okay. We'll skip that one.
But there is one thing that I do want to just visit about just briefly. This will take a half a minute.
It did.
Okay. You know, Representative Davids brought up an issue today where he said that it's part of a larger general group and not an individual to him, not a conflict of an interest. And, you know, we have had some questions about whether you would recuse yourself for voting or not. And I did check with legal counsel, and you're absolutely right, Representative Davids. For farmers, you can vote on issues that impact farms in general, as long as it's not your individual benefit and not have a conflict of interest. And, of course, in the end, it's every individual decides for themselves. But kind of as a general rule, teachers can vote on, you know, formula increases for education and not have a conflict of an interest. So, you know, everybody will decide for themselves, but, you know, just because you happen to, you know, have some insurance issues or a farm, you know, background, you're not going to be in trouble for conflict of interest. I just wanted to mention that for the conference committee.
Great. Okay. So, Representative Davids.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to, if we could, for just a second, go back to the Marshall Library issue. And possibly, I don't know if the Senate would be willing to, if the House went with the PILT provision. And maybe I could have staff define that a little bit better if we just adopt the.
Madam, go ahead. Chicken talk.
No. I'm just looking at maybe we could do the PILT provision from the Senate and then the House Library provisions for Marshall on the sales tax exemption exclusion.
Can we? And maybe Ms. Dalton can talk a little bit about. You know, what we are thinking is what you want is about the same price.
Well, Madam Chair, the PILT provision is not my provision.
Oh,
it's an issue that Minnesota DNR.
This isn't the ditch.
It's a DNR thing, and they administered it last year just fine, and I'd let them keep administering it. They think it would make it more clear for them if they get this language.
Okay.
But they've been working on it. But just because it says built by it doesn't mean it's my deal.
Okay. Where did it come from? Where
DNR.
Is the? There's an amendment floating around.
DNR and I think Department of Revenue have been working on it. I don't know where it came from.
We had that.
Oh, we thought it was the Senate.
We had
one.
It was. It was in the
it
Senate
was a
bill.
Senate amendment, but it came from. Didn't come from.
It came from the department.
It came from.
It was the A59 amendment, and then we set it aside because it wasn't right.
Those guys talk about it.
Sure. I mean, I guess you know we were thinking if that was something important in you, and this was something important to us, maybe we put them together. But Commissioner, did you want
to? Madam Chair, in the technical memo that we did distribute to the chairs before the conference committee, we did point out some things that needed to be updated in terms of effective dates. We our technical provisions that were brought before the committee did update some provisions as it related to PILT that would clarify what happened in the 2013 bill. Between the time that we offered our technical bill and the time that we're in conference committee, there was some language that the DNR had worked on with the Senate in order to clarify the distribution of the PILT related to ditch assessments. And then within the last day, there was some updating of this amendment in order to make sure that the distribution for the ditch assessments, as well as some of the distribution for wildlife management lands, would be retroactive to last year, because the language was not clear on how to distribute that. So in that case, there would be some counties that would either receive the difference of wildlife management lands, and then they would receive a double ditch assessment in for 2014 to make up for 2013. But we are request. There is some underlying things that need to be clarified as it relates to PILT in our technical bill. This was set aside because of the additional language that was related to the distribution of ditch assessments. In order to take off the fiscal cost, we would have to take off the retroactive language related to the wildlife management lands. But as it relates to the ditch assessments for the 2013, we did not adjust the forecast for those ditch payments. So, but that would make, I believe that that would make the amendment zero if we took out the retroactive piece related to the wildlife management lands, Mr. Madam Chair.
Okay. Davids?
Well, I guess I would like to know from the Senate if they'd be willing to talk Marshall a little bit here for that exemption on sales tax.
What does that mean?
Okay, I'm ready to speak. Would you approve it?
Not tonight, I don't think.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that again another time. Does anyone else? Oh, Representative Dabney.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And by the way, anybody who's got anything that we thought of that's easy, we should try to do quick. Yeah, but Representative Dabney has one.
Madam.
Well, we can talk about them.
Do this first and then. Yeah. Okay, Representative Dabney.
Just on the visiting issue, the fix for county program aid for the rural counties that received cuts last year. We talked about this the other night. 11 counties. Lacaparl, Marshall, Martin, Yellow Medicine.
Well, Madam Chair, we have other county programs provisions that we would have to be contemplating also.
Metro members really keep swinging for the fences for state districts. And
I just don't. Trying to avoid door knocking for them, so you just send them money.
You do it today.
Yeah.
That was very nice. Okay, so not you don't want to do that tonight. You want to?
I'm gonna think about that just a little bit.
Okay, so you was there something else you guys were?
At least just thinking we could talk a little bit more about the local taxes, the Duluth and Albert Lea and Proctor. There, we're trying to get some sort of positive compromise for Baxter and Brainerd that we would hope would happen tomorrow, that would be acceptable to Representative Ward, Senator Rood. We have, you don't have Proctor, but we don't have Baxter Brainerd, but I think there'd be strong feeling about doing Proctor if we're going to do Duluth. So, well,
and Madam Chair,
Mr. Chair, yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're interested in the food and beverage tax for Duluth and Proctor. We think it would be good to fix the issue in Albert Lea with regard to their watershed project that they're doing, so that their sales tax raises the money that they had anticipated. And if we can reach some agreement to find a mechanism that keeps Baxter collecting their sales tax for the next year, and I think that's going to be possible, so that the local legislators can work with the city and see if there's some more regional approach to that sales tax. They certainly have regional needs. They have an airport that needs sewer and water that should be discussed. I think there's some library issues that should be discussed, and we'd find a way to give them some time to do that without the sales tax expiring. And so we're interested in those four things.
So, I mean, you know, as you've both stated, I mean, obviously we have to talk to Representative Ward, and it's really important to us and to him. And but Duluth, the other part, not just the food and beverage, you know, they've really made a case to us. In fact, you should know that the way they brought us the bill, Representative Dabney and I just wouldn't do it, and then really worked hard to rework it. So we're interested in the whole Duluth proposal. I don't know if you meant the other part of it.
We did adopt the A47 amendment with regard to that, to Duluth. Is that what you're talking about or not?
No. Ms. Dalton?
What's the whole proposal?
Ms. Dalton.
Lodging.
Oh, the lodging.
Well, here's what they did is they wanted to use lodging for tourism promotion. We said, well, you know, you're supposed to be.
Yeah. Right.
And so we didn't let them do that. And instead, we let them use part of it for capital.
Really?
And the two of them working together make them pay off what they want to do quicker, and they both expire quicker, I think is fair. Correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Dabney, but I think we kind of redid their proposal for them, but we think it's a much better deal for the taxpayers up there. So, Representative Dabney.
No, Madam Chair, you covered it well. I think the other reminder for the conferees is that Duluth already has I think it's a half-cent lodging. They have an existing lodging tax for promotion, and they were asking for more, and we thought the industry apparently supports the increased taxation. We just wanted to put towards the capital rather than additional promotion.
I did talk to the senators that are from Duluth, and they indicated to me that they were most concerned about the food and beverage tax. They thought it was the majority of the money was coming from there. And that was the conversation I had with Senator Reinert. And so that's kind of what I'm moving forward with.
Could we look at the different language that's different from our proposals? I thought they were more similar than apparently they are.
On Duluth?
Yes. Are they? Is it that different?
There's only one difference.
Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the differences, there are two differences in our language. One is strictly related to the amendment that was adopted that
Simonson's,
which gives the Duluth the bonding authority.
Right.
And then the second one is just the fact that we also say that they are allowed the extra half-cent lodging tax to fund these same capital projects. And since both of the taxes would expire when money is sufficient to pay off the bonds, both of these taxes would just expire quicker.
And I guess, and I don't know if your staff wants to tell us about what you have, but you know, I just don't have a big problem with these lodging taxes. If you look at what most of us around this table, our communities are paying lodging tax. I mean, I'm fine with Duluth having to pay a little more in lodging tax, you know, when people go to visit there. I mean, so I think that's an appropriate use for it. So,
Madam Chair, but as with the Rangers, I would need to talk to the senators from Duluth.
Sure, okay, and we'll just wait. We had the impression that they all wanted this, but absolutely, if you have to check. Maybe, should we just hold on all of it then?
Two of them.
Two? There's two. Okay, so should we just hold on all the sales tax then? Okay.
For all of it?
Yeah.
All the locals? Okay.
Anything else that people can think of?
Madam Chair,
yes.
there is a technical fix for the Ag Utilization Research Institute so that the money that was appropriated last year can go directly to them. It's on Senate Bill page 82. It's Article 6,
Senate
Section
6-1.
It's a non-cost item, and it's languages.
It's just an amendment that's coming out?
No, it's a Senate provision. It's not an amendment.
Do you know where it is on the side-by-side?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Pollack. Ms. McQuaid.
It's on page 29 of the side-by-side.
It's Article 6, Section 1.
Article 6, Section 1.
Okay.
It's just Aury gets the direct appropriation.
It's just the direct appropriation to Aury as opposed to
So it doesn't have a cost.
It doesn't have a cost.
So
Looking at my.
I think the main office is in like Waseca. No, it's down south.
It was in Austin.
So it's southern Minnesota somewhere. Marshall.
Age 20.
Marshall, there you go.
We did this?
Commissioner, is this?
You okay?
Fine. Okay. Whoever's okay with it. Okay, so your motion again is?
I would move Senate Article 6, Section 1.
Senate Article 6, Section 1. Discussion. All those in favor say aye. 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 Opposed say nay. The motion carries.
And then, Madam Chair, Senator Rest had some interesting conversation about some groomers that were doing hill signs or airports or something yesterday.
I missed it.
Well, Senator Rest.
You know, I was really tired. And when we started talking about grooming the snowmobile
trails. Trails.
And I started talking about how similar it was to removing snow from the runways. And I really meant from the ski hills.
Oh.
And you all didn't blink, so you must have all been really, really tired.
With your snowmobile groomers.
The snowmobile groomers. Well, so, anyway, I'm not thinking about that.
Ms. McQuay can tell us how much we cost. How it costs.
Madam Chair and members, the cost for that provision is found on the spreadsheet on page 4. It's the trail grooming equipment exemption. It's $280,000 in the first biennium, $570,000 in the second biennium.
That's too much.
With the library?
70.
But what does the library cost?
40.
72. 71. Still too much.
You got to add some stuff to
it. Yeah. Is anybody over there's 210?
Or that would actually be a good trade for us.
Yes, it would. Just ask if this is okay, unless someone has a motion. Does any person, House staff or Senate staff or the department, see something that's obvious that we could just get out of the way? Or are we kind of at the point where we're done? Oh, I think we did do the District 1 hospital, didn't we? And we know it's already signed into law, I think.
It's already signed into law. Yeah. So
but I think we adopted it,
oh,
too.
And you know, we just need to reconsider, and I'll move
it
that.
And not move it.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I would move that we reconsider the action by which we approved the District 1 hospital provision.
Which is where?
Okay, so Representative Dabney has that citation in his hand there.
And, Madam Chair, that would be Senate Article 1, Sections 27 and 34.
So I move reconsider. So
we're going to reconsider that now. All those in favor, aye. Opposed, say nay. We are reconsidering it now.
And now there's no motion.
Nothing.
So we don't need to do it because the governor has signed it into law, I think.
There's no motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney found the very first list.
Yes. What's on that one?
Madam Chair and Senator
Dietzick.
Do we need to remove that, or did you already remove the Helena Township for that extension? Didn't they have a date difference?
Yeah.
There is
She's
a.
So good.
Madam Chair.
She has a memory like
someone knows the.
Sylvia.
Mr. Sylvia.
Madam Chair, the conference committee did adopt the two provisions dealing with the Helena Township. This bill appeared on the Senate floor, and there was an amendment to change the effective date. So we have prepared an amendment that would change the effective date, and then if we so wish to adopt that, and then we could move to reconsider, adopt the amendment, and then readopt those provisions.
So I'll move to reconsider.
Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. We're reconsidering. And we have an amendment. Sure. If anyone's thinking of more things like this.
Remember discussing this?
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, the license revocation provision that's in the House bill,
first we have to do this.
I thought we did that.
Well, we can't remember. That's what we're asking.
I remember discussing it.
But in the meantime, Senator Squire moves the A67,
And what are we doing again now that we're reconsidering and we're doing? Changing the date.
Changing the effective date to line up with the effective date as the bill passed off the Senate floor.
Everybody okay with this? Okay. All those in favor of the SCOI A67 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted.
Then we would need to move the provision again.
Okay. And do you have that or?
I
know that.
What's the amendment?
Representative Dabney has it.
Madam Chair, Senate Article 1, Section 22 and 25.
So that's Representative Dabney's motion as amended.
Okay, just one.
Sure. You want to say that again, Representative Dabney?
Certainly, Madam Chair. It's Senate Article 1, Section 22 and 25 as amended.
That's the end, section 25.
Yeah, 25 is 6.
That's the same thing.
No, that's how long
it takes. What's the comparable House article? Because I'm trying to find it side by side.
I don't believe we have
this
one.
This is all you.
This is our stuff.
This is yours. We
don't
have anything.
The
Helena.
License revocation?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, we're still on Helena.
We're on Helena Township.
Okay, so all those in favor of the Dabney motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. That's adopted. And now we're going to license revocation. Did we do that? We don't know.
Yes.
Mr. Michael says we did it.
Yeah, I have with that we did it.
You have that?
But
okay, we did it.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Senator Rest,
yes,
the license revocation provision is House Article 7, Sections 1 and 2.
And we adopted that on 428.
Okay. Anyone else have something?
Anybody? I'm looking. Don't see any now.
So let's sign the report and go home.
Yeah, we're ready. There we go.
So I'm just checking. Can we just check our list a couple
Chair,
times?
If you got three votes, I'll make the motion.
I wouldn't do that tonight.
Everyone, check your list here.
I think we'd be reconsidering.
You think so? Oh, darn.
It'd be difficult getting signatures.
And Ms. Locke and
Ms.
Did that coin operated?
We
did the coin operated one too. Got it down. And we've directed the staff to prepare an on session article.
We should.
So they can bring us that. Well, whenever you want.
Okay.
Saturday or Sunday. I think that's all I can find.
And they're gonna continue to consult on the pension and death.
Yes.
Make sure we get that right.
Anything else? What should we do tomorrow, Mr. Chair?
Oh. Well, I think we should come in around 1:30.
Yes, we did that before.
30.
And I think by then we will probably start the discussion of TIF. And we have, I'm sorry, I'm getting the microphone point.
The key thing was 1:30. Just say that again.
It was 1:30. And we're getting narrowed down. At some point, we're going to start talking money. So tomorrow afternoon, I'm prepared for some of that.
Anything else for anybody else?
What am I forgetting?
What are you forgetting?
They're saying unsession.
Well, I thought we were going to direct the staff to create an article.
And we hope that we'll have the minerals thing.
Right. And if they're down to two things and we can't come to agreement, we just don't do them.
Yeah,
we just don't change current law.
Right.
Is that okay? Okay. So anything else? Okay. I guess we are adjourned, and we'll see you at 1:30 tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Yeah.